Blog Talk Radio.
Never mind.
Got the top spot title. Spent the hour in the bathroom, walked out looking like a model. God, doing what you do, got me right there with Apollo on the moon. Who needs genies in a bottle? Girl, if they already got you.
Well, you made me feel so lucky. Finally the stars aligned. Never has it been so easy. To be alive and together this heart of mine. You know what I mean? I know what you like. It'll all together, baby, we gon' be alright.
Public transportation, would you still be at home for me with the candles waiting? What? And get my mind back adjacent to the place of a young visionary, a player to you know.
Brother Sharif, Brother Sharif, Brother Sharif, and Thor Ministry Thor. Radio. Radio. Brother Sharif and Thor Ministry Thor. Radio. Radio. Radio.
Dig, dig, dig this.
Ladies and gentlemen,
here we go again. How low can you go?
How y'all feel out there?
I know you're gonna dig this.
Okay, party people in the house.
Yeah, boy.
Are you ready for more with Thor Radio?
Radio.
Are you being harassed by debt collectors? Are you facing foreclosure?
Okay.
We'll bring the hammer down on your debt by using Thor strategies and tactics.
Okay.
Brother Sharif and Thor will educate you on the consumer protection laws, which will allow you to hammer away your debt. Get ready, reset, and restore with Thor Radio. Thor Ministry Radio. Now, here is our own Brother Sharif.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Greetings. Welcome to Thor Radio Network, a.k.a. Thor Ministry, a.k.a. Truth Radio, a.k.a. House of Reality, a.k.a. House of Restoration. This is your host and founder, Brother Sharif, along with my illustrious beautiful group of Thorines, Lori, Layla, and Rudy. We're here today on our popular Free Your Mind Friday. Today is June the 20th, 2014. We are live. We're glad to be here, although it seems like we just left, being that we had an evening show on last night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Very good show. You have access to the archive if you wanted to go and revisit that episode. But we're back here this morning again. First of all, I want to give all praises and honors to the Creator, who is all-powerful, all-knowing, and everywhere present. I am fully aware that with him I am everything, and without him I am absolutely nothing. So again, I want to thank him for giving me the opportunity to be here, and as well, having you here. Today is Free Your Mind Friday. It's basically a freelance show where we talk about topics up to and including debt, but not necessarily. We're able to venture off into other economic topics. We want to stay in the arena, but not contained to a certain part of the arena, meaning just debt. So it's a great opportunity for everyone to join in and talk about things that are sad, funny, have a little fun, share some parodies. We want to thank you for coming into the House of Restoration Ministry, our synagogue. And here at the House of Restoration Ministry, we are in certain religious sects would be considered prosperity preachers. And we use three Bibles here, and I want to call your attention to what our sermon will be about today, and we're going to be preaching from the book of the FDCPA. We're also going to use the Bible of the Fair Credit Reporting Act and the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, chapter 1692, in your commercial book of consumer protection laws. And we're going to be talking from a variety of verses, 1692, EF, EG, E1, E2. So have your commercial Bibles ready. At certain times during this call, our sister Layla will be reading from those consumer scriptures. We're going to have some fun, talk about some things, and get out of here. So, Layla, Lori, and Rudy, I was told last night by my team that I talk too much. They had a big mouth. So I promised today that I would digress, if I can, and allow them to navigate the show. Got some emails saying, let the women talk, bro. Let the women talk. So I'm going to do that. It's not that I'm not comfortable with my team talking. They're very good speakers. They speak from the heart. They speak truth. And they're going to continue to do that. And I'm going to allow them to do that today. And I'll chime in as much as I can. So, Layla, I'm going to let you take the steering wheel. I'm going to get in the back. But I'll have my commercial Bibles in hand just in case we have to share some consumer scriptures with people. Amen. So, Layla, take over. Wait a minute. Oh, well, I got to open Layla's line. Layla, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't have you open.
Okay. Welcome, everybody. I was laughing in the background because, you know, Brother Sharice is funny. You know, he's wanting to put us on Center Street, and we're like, okay, you know, you say you're going to do that, and now he's really saying that he's going to do that for doing it. But I'm happy to be able to talk to everybody today. I just want to be able to share Thor's disclosure before we get started. The information discussed on this show is not and will not be considered legal advice. There are no attorneys, bar members, or any private legal groups associated with the show. Everyone is informed to please thoroughly research your information prior to taking any action that we discuss today.
Well, in other words, let me just say this. In other circles, we're private.
Yes. Yes.
We're private.
Privacy. We're private.
Right.
I mean, that
That's
is
right. We're private.
Really,
you don't know the difference in ministry and the private. We're private right now.
Yeah.
Let me shut up.
Well, you know, I would like a sense of privacy, you know, but I know that those people that are really, really elite have a sense of privacy. They can wield anybody the way they want to wield them and tell them to do what they want to do while they stand back in the shadows and have everybody do what they want to do. And there are a few people that can live that way. But, you know, I do have a vehicle. I do drive my car, automobile, whatever you want to call it. I do have automobile insurance. I do have utilities that I pay. I do buy groceries from the grocery store, though I'm learning to grow my own food. You know, so I'm still doing things out there in the public. I believe in anonymity.
Well, you go,
I believe
go right ahead because I'm not about that. I'm private, so I don't need any of those things. I travel, and I'm not going to have insurance because insurance is slavery. Let me shut up, man. Hey, man, you need to do all that, man. You be trying to make fun of people, man, and that ain't cool, man. You know, you just leave things alone, man. Why you keep antagonizing?
I hear what you're saying. I hear those people that speak that, and that's fine. And you know what? To each his own, and God bless you, you know.
And let me just say
own.
For the record, I mean, there's some validity to that. I'm really just being humorous because I'm humorous about the consumer protection law. So I'm not teasing anybody. I'm not discounting anybody. There's some validity to it. I'm just being a clown today.
Absolutely.
That's what I decided to be.
I wholeheartedly, I believe in asset protection. I believe in anonymity. I understand a lot of all of that. And I understand the need for it, to be honest with you. However, you know, I've traveled in a lot of those circles, and I have found my way, you know, seek and ye shall find, and I have found my way to Brother Sharice and Thor. And I have really just rid myself of the other parameters that I was associated with so I can dive myself into the message that Thor delivers because, you know, we know what's happening out there. We're being suffocated as a people, and it doesn't matter where you come from, social, economical background. I know people who've made millions of dollars, and they've lost their entire estate. I know people who never had anything, and they are just like under the neck. Somebody's got their foot on their neck, and they can barely breathe. So from one end of the spectrum to the other, everybody's been affected by this economic downturn in some way. So how do we deal with it? You know, for those of you who are new to this call and have heard my story, I'm not going to relive my story, but the fact that there was a turning point for me, and the turning point for me was when all of that money, the $700 billion of money that was spent or given as a welfare, really was welfare, to these big corporate banks, for all of the mess that they did. And I know that's from the foreclosure lane. We're talking about debt collection and everything else. But that was a turning point for me because I'm like, you know what? I've seen what has gone on behind the scenes. And this is crazy. And nobody went to prison for this. Nobody got indicted. This is crazy. And they gave all these people this corporate welfare. And there are people suffering out here losing their wealth. There was something that snapped, and I just said, you know, I'm going to create my own stimulus package. So just being introduced to the principles of Thor and being able to say, you know what, there is something on the books that I was not aware of, actually, the FDCPA. Also, for those in the credit arena, the FCRA and the FTCPA for the telephoning of for debt collection, when I learned a little bit about that on the surface, I'm like, you know what? That is so cool. I am so into that. I can so see myself moving forward because I have been in seek of this knowledge. And God has blessed me. That's all I can say. You know, they say, seek and you shall find. I'm a seeker of the truth, and I feel like I've been brought to the truth. And I've been diving in to learn this because I am going to help empower myself and my family so that I can leave a legacy. That's all that I've ever wanted to do, and any of the things that I've done, to be able to stand for something and leave something for my family. That's what my family did for me, and I aim to do that for my family. So with that being said, I'm just happy that everybody's here. We had a great call, like I said, last week, and I'm going to go ahead and pass the call off to either Lori or Rudy so they can have say whatever it is that they need to say, and we'll get on with the program.
Hello and happy Friday. Thought today, it is proven that two halves of something make a whole. Today we're in the second half of this year, with this being the 6th month of 12, and the past 15 days of 30 days. So we're past the 15-day mark of 30 days. My suggestion to all, including myself, is to make the second half much more educational and productive than the first half. Looking back briefly and only briefly, not lingering in the past, I can see what I did not do. So I am personally moving forward in another venue, and the venue is SCORE, with the FDCPA, the CRA, and the TCPA. So set your goals also. Make your goals become a reality. Only you know where you are and where you want to be. Utilize all that is available here at SCORE. Read, study, and put it to practice. Because I believe education is the key that unlocks the door to success. Thank you.
Right on, Rudy. Hey, everybody. Happy Friday. I'm happy to be here. Hope you guys are, too. And I'm excited to free my mind. So let's get started.
All right. Well, we're going to talk today about what you heard Brother Sharif talk about. If you don't have your pen and paper, I should have said this at the top of the call, please make sure you have a notebook, pen and paper. I have a notebook dedicated to this. We're going back to school. For those of you who have been away from school for a while, I know it might be hard. You know, I can tell you guys that I went through school. I did well. My parents always expected great things of me, but I had no desire to stay in school, okay? I didn't see myself in that. So, but I did good, okay? I didn't like to read. Now I find myself a compulsive reader. So please make sure you have a notebook that you dedicate to this. Pull up the 15 U.S.C. 1692. You can just go to Google. Go to your website. Go to the website. Type in 15 U.S.C. 1692. That's what we're going to be talking about today. And
pull up your Bibles. Pull out your commercial Bibles and take us to chapter 1692. And what verse? What verse is it right?
You know, and if you don't have a book, that's okay. Just grab a piece of paper and start writing. Just start writing something. So you have something.
Sit next to your neighbor and share your commercial Bible with your neighbor, man.
Yes. And we're going to start right at the very beginning, because that is really the precipice of what this is all founded upon, okay? This particular code was originated by Congress for our behalf, on our behalf. Congressional Findings and Declaration of Purpose. This is 1692. It's the very first precept of this document. And it's what they call abusive practices. It's right there at the very top. A, and I'm just going to go ahead and read this to you, and I'm going to read the purpose to you, and then what we're going to do is go into the definitions, because the definitions is really important. When you hear Brother Sharif talk about, you know, a debt collector and a mortgage servicer and a creditor and a consumer and a debt, you need to know what those are. But let's talk about why this was enacted, okay? if you understand the background, I think it will be really, really, it's going to be a lot easier for you to really understand why this was enacted and how you can apply it to yourself. Okay, abusive practices, that's where they start. They found out that there were a lot of companies that were abusing the people. Okay, and they realized this back in the 1970s. They say that there is an abundant evidence of the use of abuse, deceptive, and unfair debt collection practices by many debt collectors. That's the first sentence, the very first wording that they have with this Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Okay, the abuse of collection practices contribute to, number one, the number of personal bankruptcies. If you listen to the news, if you're reading the newspaper, if you're very much aware, bankruptcies are at an all-time high. Why? It's telling you right here. Debt collection practices contribute to the number of personal bankruptcies. Number two, marital instability. When you have financial issues going on in your life, and if you're in a marital situation, those of you who are in a marital situation, you know what that means. Three,
that's
loss
some damage.
Of job. What? What'd you say?
I said that's some damage.
Oh, yeah, that's some damage.
There's
a lot of damage. You know, and with some mental, emotional, physical, it just eats away at you. You know, it eats away at you, and that's not a good situation. Okay, so loss of jobs. We know what's going up. You hear in the news, unemployment is at an all-time. Well, they report the numbers to be better. But if you go into some communities and you hear some of the findings coming out of some communities, their unemployment rates are at an all-time high. So, you know, they talk about how these numbers are a little bit skewed. We have to be careful about that, but unemployment is really still an issue going on in this country. But that contributes to why they have formulated this statute. And lastly, an invasion of individual privacy. Okay, so for those of you, you know, the private, okay, yeah, there are invasions of privacy. You know, the Patriot Act came out. What did that do? That opened everything up. That was a violation of privacy under the guise of what happened in 2001. So for the last, 13 years, there's been a lot of invasion of privacy. We're learning through the credit reporting aspect that there are people that are entities that are inquiring on credit reports. That's Lori's area right now. That's not an area that we're really talking about right now, but as we're learning and growing together, there are invasions of privacy occurring right now. We listened to Brother Sharif talk on a prior call within the last week, talk about the violations that are being committed and how we, when we pull out on credit reports, we don't get to see some of the information that some of the creditors that we're applying for see. We're never privy to that information. So that is a violation of privacy. So in the very first chapter of the FDCPA, they're telling us that these things are the reason why they caused it, and we're experiencing these things as a people right now today. So grasp your mind around this and take hold of this and realize it was created for us. Okay, the purpose, I'm going to go down to the bottom. We're at Section E. The purpose of this chapter or the subchapter is, one, to eliminate the abusive debt collection practices by these debt collectors. Okay? They want to eliminate it. And we've had articles that Thor has sent out just showing case after case after case where we have these states and some municipalities going after these debt collectors because they are abusing it and they're filling their own coffers and they're not disseminating that money down to us. And they're not giving us that money. All right? And then we talked the other day about, you know, how these municipalities are collecting this money, but they're turning around and they're still coming to tax you. They're still coming to collect, so they're double dipping. And we're sitting back like, oh, we're suffocating. You know, we don't know what to do. We're lethargic. All right, and we got this.
Hey, Layla.
Yes.
Layla. Yeah, I want to chime in on that just real quick. If what Layla's talking about there, if everybody this weekend, it would be a really good exercise for everyone, go to your state attorney general website and look up on there. It'll have, it'll either be under like news briefings or, I don't know, updates or what we've been doing or consumer enforcement or, you know, however they've got it tabbed. Just explore on that website for a little bit. And when you pull up these news briefings, and even on the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's website, you can do the same. But it'll alert you to exactly what Layla was just stating, that the states and municipalities are going after these debt collectors, and they're utilizing the very basics of what's being taught here, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And they're, just like with all the foreclosures that's been going across the nation, they made millions, with a Z, not an S, with a Z, Z-Z, millions of dollars. And I think you know, it shook out to everybody getting like maybe $1,200 or something. But there, and whenever you look at these complaints and you look at what they went after them with, was just some real easy little clean shavings of the violations, and you can start to kind of put it in your head, and hopefully it'll start to gel as to how powerful this Protection Act is. And when you couple them together with the other Protection Acts that are out there, the TCPA, because that's another one that the state utilize. I forget which one it is right now. There's a state, an attorney general that I have to redo the article. I can't remember. But there's one that's going in hard on somebody with the TCPA. But, you know, they do it all day long, and they're tapping into a ton of money. And anyway, I just wanted to chime in on that, where people could just reference that for their own self and just spend the weekend, get your beverage, sit down. Just explore it, read it again, and look over these complaints and look at how simple what they're pointing out. They're saying, he hit me, it hurt, and I believe he hit me, and X, Y, Z, and here you go. You're off and running, and the next thing you know, the court's saying, all right, that's $400 trillion right back at you. And then the next day comes around, and they do it right over again. It's a little cottage industry. You too can own your own little house. Sorry,
that's
Layla.
That's okay, Rudy. Do you have anything? Because I'm going forward. You know, Rudy, do you have anything to say?
Yeah. Well, to piggyback on that, if you can hear me,
mm-hmm.
The groundwork has been laid when the agencies that protect us and have an oversight over the debt collectors, when they have done their homework and they have put forth a case, like Lori said, you can find that on the Attorney General's website, the latest things that are happening. They've already done the homework. They will tell you, like she said, why they went after them. And even if you're going to get a little bit of money that they say will go to each individual person, it does not stop you, the individual, from going through your paperwork and seeing what they did to you and filing your own claim. You're never excluded from filing your own claim. People just don't do it. They just don't do it. It's all laid out there for you. You have to see what applies to you, what the state found that they did wrong, and then you can say, well, gee, what did they do to me? Because you're in those statistics. That's why the state has come up with what they've done wrong. You're one of the statistics in that group of numbers that the state claims or has proven that whatever entity it is has done something to you. But yet we don't go in, like I said, and sit back and go, well, what did they really do to me? Let me see how I can make myself beneficial of some of those dollars.
Absolutely. So we're going to get into some of the definitions in a moment. So I'm going to go ahead and finish the purposes, okay? So when Rudy and Lori are talking about, you know, these practices by these debt collectors, they're evident. You know, the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, that stands for Federal Trade Commission. You just do a search on Google or any other search engine that you use. You type that in, and you're going to see so many things pop up. And there are going to be articles, and you're going to say, well, you know, this particular entity went after this particular debt collector, and they got, I don't remember who it was. I mean, we see so many articles coming through, $500 million. Okay, they got this entity got, if you, any of you all recall which article that was, please chime in, $500 million, and they didn't pass that on to their people. They're keeping that in their coffers. So that in itself, if they're using this simple, maybe 12 pages, I haven't even really counted the pages, but it's so very, very thin. If they're using these guidelines of these statutes to be able to go after these entities, utilizing this for yourself is going to be a great deal, a great benefit. Okay, so the second thing that they, the purpose for why they're doing this. Now, there are people that, there are entities out there. The terminology is persons. There's a definition for persons. But there are debt collection companies out there that are doing things the right way, they say. You know, so we don't want to adversely affect them. We don't want to make sure we still protect them in the way that they're doing this. So they say that number two, to ensure that those debt collectors who refrain from using abusive debt collection practices are not competitively disadvantaged. So they want to make sure that they get to stay in a fair game. Those people that are doing the right thing, they get to stay in a fair game because, you know, you know that lost leader, you see a newspaper coupon, it says you can come in and get a six-pack of Coke for a dollar or whatever. And you go in there, and they know you're going to go in there and take them, and they limit you to, like, two packages or so, or cases so. But they know you're going to come in there and do more shopping. So they know that, okay, well, we'll lose money on this, but we'll gain money on the other side. So just to prevent all of the, you know, the companies from doing that same thing to try to get people in the business, they want to keep that playing field level so that the company that's doing the right thing is not driven out of business by the monopolies that are created that are doing things deceptively. All right, and then the third thing is to promote consistent state action to protect consumers against debt collection abuses. Okay, so they want to make sure that the states have their acts together and they're remaining consistent among the abuses, you know, in the way that they treat these abuses. So this is federal. Federal covers and blankets everything. You know, so when we talk about these other practices, you know, like I said, A for V, F, T, A, B, C, G, E, F, G, whatever you want to name them, you know, the citizenship, peace, I don't know, you know, Brother Sharif talks about the derriere print, you know, all of those things that people are doing to try to get their cases won. You know, I've been down those roads, I've analyzed them, I've studied them, and I went through a process of elimination because what I did learn through any and all of those processes is that all of those roads lead to court. And even for those that want to stay out of court, they stay out of court by using what they call a special appearance. Well, you know, you're still dealing with the court through the special appearance, but, you know, and... You know, when I first met Brother Sharif, the first thing that came out of my mouth was, I don't want to go to court. You know, I'm not prepared to go to court. Well, this statute arms you with the power, and it makes you become fearless to be able to stand up tall on the truth based on the definitions that we're going to go into in a moment and stand tall and say, you know what, I've got a strong case, and you've got to hear this case based on this premise, because how do we go to court? How we go to court is really, really important. And that's one of the reasons why I took this process of elimination personally to say, you know what, I don't think this is the angle that I should go to court in. Yeah, I see all this stuff, but I'm not, you know, I have to be able to stand behind it, but I'm not seeing enough to support it. And what I found over the years is that what worked maybe 2, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, I heard Brother Sharif bring out people pulling up their post office, the mailboxes and taking the numbers off their homes. I never heard of that. I wasn't around during that time in that arena. But people were doing all these kinds of things. I'm like, really? So what do? They close the loopholes. You know, they think of people as paper terrorists. I think I heard Bush talk about paper terrorists. You know, so do you want to, we know that they have a terrorist list. I want to fly out of the country. I've flown out of the country before. I want to continue flying out of the country. Yeah, I'm going to be a consumer, and I'm going to fly out of the country, so I do have to get through some of those checkpoints to do so. And I have flown out of the country without some of those documents as well, so I know it can happen both ways, by the way. So, you know, I'm not saying one or the other, but I'm just telling you that in order to move and groove and do the things that you want to do and live your life, I just decided that I needed to make sure I stayed on a thought process that would bring me the solution that I was looking for. All right?
Hey,
does anyone have any? Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you again. But
go ahead.
Yeah, so check this out. This is what I call mad cow disease. That is exactly what it is. You know, whenever you're going or when you're doing all that other nonsense, it's mad cow disease. Just lay down. Just lay down and stop it and hush, because that judge is laughing at you, just like in the Carrie movie. They're all going to laugh at you. They're all going to laugh at you, you know, because they know they can't stand behind that. They can't hear it. They can't enforce it. They can't, you know, your notary process and your mailbox and your post office and you're the postmaster and you're, you know, not on the citizenship. And it's all mad cow disease. That's all it is. And that judge is just going to shut you down. He's going to shut you straight down. And the FDCPA is not a comfortable, beautiful ride. You got bubble wrap around you. You're not going to jail. You're not going to get a mental evaluation. The judge isn't going to say, this chick is cray-cray. She's cray-cray in here. She's saying, you know, XYZ, XYZ. And we need to shut her down. We need to just hush her up, you know. The FDCPA is not as comfortable. It's a language that the judge can hear. It's a language the judge can enforce. It's a language that the judge isn't going to sit back and think that you're, you know, spouting a bunch of stuff that's going to hurt the public and the bankruptcy and the this and the that and the other. It's going to keep you in a nice, safe, little protected boat. You're going to be able to just guide smoothly through. You're able to point out and you're able to show who is who, what is what, and the judge can stand behind you. Sorry, I just had to point out the mad cow disease.
No.
Everybody got to stop that. Everybody just has to stop that. Quit that notary stuff. Quit that. Because no judge can enforce that.
The notary presentment, the administrative process.
No,
absolutely.
Yeah, they just want you to get your crap and get back out of their courtroom. You can't bring that stuff in there, and you can't do any of that stuff. And like Cherise says, I mean, yeah, there is some legitimacy to what's going on, and yeah, you know, this has happened and that's happened, and yeah, but you have to understand there has to be some kind of governing of society. I would say 70% of the society out there can't govern themselves. They just can't. You know what I'm saying, Layla? People, unfortunately, just can't maintain. And so there has to be every club, every whatever has rules and regulations. Even your dang pool out there at your in your neighborhood has rules and regulations. The pool. So when you're dealing in commerce and all, you know, and in the public, you've got to have rules and regulations. I mean, if the pool's got it, we got to have it, you know. And it affords you, instead of looking at it in a negative light as, oh, they're trying to hold me down, they're trying to regulate me, they're trying to tell me I can't this, they're trying to tell me I can't that. Look at it as an opportunity. When people are sending you letters or trying to foreclose on you or calling your phone, celebrate. Celebrate and think of it as a job. Think of it as a payday. Think of it as income and potential and opportunities for your family, for you. Get addicted to learning and get addicted to understanding what the FDCPA and the TCPA, how it can protect you, and the FCRA. Learn your rules of civil procedure. But stop that mad cow disease out there. Put that stuff down. Stop that. I'm out.
Absolutely. Rudy, what about you?
Okay, well, my comment is based on the statement that you just read, the last part of that Section E. And it says, and to promote consistent state action to protect consumers against debt collection abuses. Well, right now the country is basically divided because the different circuit views on the interpretation of the FDPCA as it relates to mortgage foreclosures. So, again, it's pretty much like your Bible. The person reading it can go in and exegete that text, like we're exegeting this document here, and come up with what they believe it says. But again, we have to go back to the basics of what your documents say, actually, in your contracts or the covenants that you have signed, what you agreed to, and then what the debt collector is picking out of that to use against you, what you need to go in and pick out to use for yourself with the laws within the FDPCA that protects you against those debt collectors. And so people need to get into it like you're doing today. Also, become aware of your local court rules. And like the young man said very, very nicely last night, know your laws. Who can foreclose on you? Each state is different. I think you have 26 non-judicial states, and the balance would be judicial. You have an opportunity to go into court to defend yourself on one half, and on the other half you don't. But the thing is, people need to understand this law, because once you, and I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but once you get into that arena, are you really dealing with a creditor, or are you dealing with a debt collector? It makes all the difference in the world. And that's what people need to understand. Change lanes and change languages, and then you'll change your position. So they were trying to do that. They're still working towards having a consistent state action, but the country itself is divided. And the only way to make those changes is for people to go properly and do what they have to do and set forth the precedent model that says, this is what it says, this is what we're doing, they can't do what they're attempting to do.
Right. And you know, on the, I know you talked about the judicial and non-judicial states. You know, if you, on the four, what we call the alleged foreclosure front, for those people that are in a non-judicial state, I am in a non-judicial state. What Thor teaches is to be proactive and not reactive. And a lot of the processes that we were talking about puts one in a defensive mode. You know, if you're sending the QWRs, yeah. If you're sending the QWRs or the debt validation letter, we're going to talk about that in a moment in the when we get to the definition. Who are you sending it to and why? You know, are you sending it to the right party? I mean, because if you're not sending it to the right party, that's why they're not hearing you. And that's what we're going to talk about in a moment. But if you're, you know, we have to be on the proactive side for those that are in a non-judicial state, because the documents that are signed give the trustee the right to act without a judicial action according to those documents. But when we understand the FDCPA, that's not, or the state, and the state laws that are in place, that is not necessarily the case. All right, so we'll talk about that in a moment. And if, obviously, if you're in a judicial state, they have to bring an action against you. But those that are in, for those of you that are in judicial states and don't really understand the non-judicial, they are not bringing actions against the people in non-judicial states. So the foreclosures happen a lot sooner. So you know, in a good economy, which we're not technically in a good economy, I mean, foreclosures were happening within 90 to 120 days after 90 days of being in foreclosure. So literally within 5 months, somebody would have lost their home on the foreclosure front. But if we're talking about debt collection, you know, if you got credit cards, automobile loans, you know, they are to bring actions against you in the court in all states, as far as that I understand. So just want to make sure we're talking about two different things, but they're still considered debt collection in the process, and we want to make sure we cover everybody that's on this call with the issues that they're bringing forward. So we basically just talked about the reason why the statute was put in place in the first place and why they have put the statute in place. Okay, so what we're going to talk about is, okay, who are we and who are these people that are coming after anybody that, either ourselves or anybody that we know? Who are they? How are they defined? And we're going to go to that. So we're going to go to 1692A. These are the definitions under the code, 15 U.S.C. 1692, Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Okay, and there are four definitions that we're going to focus on today.
Hey, Layla.
Yes.
I want to point something out that's real basic that maybe can help people when they're on the learning curve, whenever they're just being introduced to this. In your state and in your federal, whenever you're looking at statute, the state is set up just like the federal set up just like the state. When you're looking at these statutes, they're always going to be titled under certain titles, you know, like the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And you can always mirror one to your state. And each, whenever you look at these statutes, they're going to be set up all the same. It's going to explain to you exactly what the deal is, you know, what the title, and then your definitions, like Layla's about to go over. And if you'll start looking at these, they're all set up, and it unfolds beautifully before you, and at the very end it shows you what your cause of action is, how you can go in on them, what your product cause of action is. And whenever you're looking at the Telephone Consumer Protection or you're looking at the FCRA, each state will have a mirroring or a balancing statute.
Like an order, Lori? Are you talking about like an order? And that mirrors each other, or?
Yeah, what I'm saying is there are statutes that mirror the FDCPA with each state. So, like with Texas, it has one. With Kansas, like last night we were talking about Kansas and Washington. Kansas and Washington are really, really strongly consumer-protected states. I mean, you can get you some Merry Christmas in those states, some Merry, Merry Christmas. I'm thinking about moving to Washington because I love the outdoors. But whenever you go into your Google search bar or whenever you're in your state, all you have to do is, like, for Texas, put Texas debt collection practices or, you know, Texas telephone consumer protection, and it'll mirror and it'll almost unfold exactly like these federal statutes that you're reading.
That's
awesome. Then that will go back into, I'm sorry, that will go back into what Brother Sharif did last week, a week before last, when he did the small claims court. If you're not, and like the man who was on last night, if you don't feel like you're ready to go into a larger court, then you can do the state claim, which is what you're talking about being mirrored in the federal, in your small claims court and get your remedy, your declaratory judgment there, and then move forward.
Right on.
Awesome, awesome. Before we move forward into the declarations, there are a couple of things that came to mind, and I just want to bring them forward, and we probably will touch bases on it just a little bit in a little bit, because we talk about all these different processes, and I know that we have people that are, you know, that are listening, and I know that you're maybe possibly in a state of confusion, you're trying to get clarity. I'm just going to read this statement. I have a listing of all kinds of statements and or affirmations, if you will, and I stumbled upon one just a few moments ago. Confusion is the chief cause of worry. I want to repeat that. Confusion is the chief cause of worry. So we need all of the information to make the right decision. Okay? And that's what we're talking about. Risk is not fearful. Lack of education is. Risk is not fearful, but lack of education is. So that's what we here at Thor are talking about. We're talking about educating ourselves so that we can lose that fear factor and gain confidence, because that's really what fear is. Fear is a lack of confidence.
It's a lack of knowledge.
Yes, fear is a lack of knowledge, but it stems from a lack of confidence.
Yeah, when you grow up and you realize there's nobody under the bed, when you realize there's nobody under the bed and there wasn't anything to be afraid of after all, you know, it's all good. So look underneath your bed. Just pull the blanket up, everybody. Look underneath your bed. There's nobody underneath the bed. So yank the blanket back and get to know who this boogeyman is and remove the fear and empower yourself with this knowledge. And the knowledge will bring your courage, and the courage will bring you to Dick Tolree.
you know, sometimes people are products of their environment.
And there are certain cultures who have never really gone to court, didn't have behavior to have to take them to court. So in this venue here, you have a new set of family members, so to speak, who are going to encourage you, like you said, with the education and everything that you need to strengthen you up and put you in the right posture to, what do you say, go face the boogeyman, but go do what you have to do to leave that legacy that the young man spoke of last night.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, so y'all ready to take a deep breath, and we're going to dive on in because this is the meat and potatoes. This is the crux of what it is that you need to know to be able to build any kind of a case. I don't care if it's small claims court, state court, or federal. This is the meat and potatoes. This is the basis. This is the adrenaline that you need to be able to get you over the hump. All right, so... Actually, I'm just going to go ahead and we're going to read the definitions, okay? First of all, one, the term bureau means Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection, all right? That's just their definition for who they are. The term communication, that's number two. Communication means conveying of information regarding a debt directly or indirectly to any person through any medium, okay? So there's a definition. I didn't pull it up. A definition of a person. The person could be an individual. It could be a corporation. It could be a business entity. That's the definition of a person, just FYI, but you can look it up. So directly or indirectly to any person through any medium. So what do we talk about medium? Could it be the mail? Could it be the telephone? Could it be the internet, by way of your email? What medium are we talking about? That's what communication means in relation to a debt, directly or indirectly, directly to you or by somebody else.
And there's a violation in every communication. I will tell you that right now. There is a violation in every communication. They cannot communicate with you any other way. A debt collector cannot communicate with you without violating. I just have to stress that. If people can wrap their heads around that, they cannot. There is always a violation.
Or I'm going to take
from
you
what
back.
I've seen.
Right. And the reason why these abusive practices is because they are abusing their debt collection practices. So you just heard Lori reiterate that. That's the reason. That's the cause that this statute was... We read that in the very beginning. There's an abundance of evidence that there's a use of abusive, deceptive, and unfair debt collection practices by many debt collectors. They didn't say all. They said many. We can kind of interpret that to all, but, you know, they said many. All right, so Lori is reiterating that there's a violation almost, but 9 times out of 10, it's 100%.
Every.
every,
you know, and it's saying, you know, and it's, you know, whenever it's speaking to the directly and indirectly thing, you know, if people can think about, let's say, for example, let's say, for example, you go down and you get you a new phone with a new phone number, right? And all of a sudden, you start getting all these calls from. Let's say portfolio recovery, and they're saying, they're calling my phone and they're saying, yes, Layla, is Layla there? And I say, who? What? Huh? And they continue, you know, no, this isn't Layla's phone. I don't know Layla. I'm not Layla. I don't know what you're talking about. And they continue to call me. That is indirectly trying to communicate with me. Directly communicating with me, but they're indirectly communicating with me because they're trying to reach Layla, but they're using my form of communication, my phone, trying to collect the debt. They can't do that. They can't be calling me about Layla's debt. Can't be doing that. So let them continue
to call.
So therefore,
that's a violation under the, you know, that you can go after them for, right? Because they're looking for me. On your new phone number, and now Lori has a case with them.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. So let them continue to call.
Right. So Lori's just so happy that, you know, that she got this new phone number that Layla doesn't have anymore, and now she's cha-chinging, cha-chinging all the way to the bank.
That's right. My pockets are dragging the
ching, ching, ching. All right. Okay. So that's communication. Okay. Consumer. Now that's A2, by the way. Communication is A2. When you hear these codes, you know, I talked the other day, you know, because I finally said I'm going to have to learn this. I know I have to learn it. You know, I'm an A3 that has an A6 contacting me, purporting themselves to be an A4 about an A5. Okay, and we're talking about this. Okay, and by the way, they by use of an A2. I mean, they're communicating with me by way of an A2. I didn't put that in there, but yeah, that's exactly what's happening. So you need to understand this. This is the crux of the matter, and we're emphasizing this for your benefit, for our benefit. We're gaining more knowledge by it, but definitely for your benefit. A creditor. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Consumer. Number three. Consumer means any natural person. So now we're talking about a natural person versus any person, okay? So a natural person would be you or I, in the flesh, in the body, obligated or allegedly obligated to pay any debt, okay? So when you hear brother, you know, when I first heard Brother Sharif say, we're all consumers, I'm like, consumer? My first thought was, I'm not a consumer. I'm not out there really, you know, consuming a lot of stuff, but I realize in reality I am. We just talked about that a little while ago. You know, I just kind of took offense to that term, you know, because I'm like, you know, I would say, why are you all buying all that stuff, you know, because I'm looking at it from a different perspective, but it's defining what consumer is in the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, USC 1692A3. That's what this is, okay? So when you hear these terminologies, 1692A3, that's what a consumer is, obligated or allegedly. Doesn't mean that we are allegedly. We're it's supposed that we're obligated. It's alleged.
We're calling Laurie's phone for Layla's payment. That's allegedly.
All right. That's USC 1692A3. Okay, so USC 1692A4, term creditor. Okay, and this one is really, really, it's, when I first learned, this is tricky, but it's really cool. This is so cool. A creditor means any person who offers or extends credit, creating a debt, or to whom a debt is owed. Okay, let's stop right there. I go to Rudy and say, you know, Rudy, I want to buy this car. And I don't have, you know, the $50,000 to buy this car. But, I've got some of the money. I'll put some of it down. But can you loan me the balance? And Rudy says, sure, I'll give you the money. And Rudy goes to get her checkbook, and she writes me a check. You know, I've got $5,000. She's going to write me a check for $45,000 so I can go buy my $50,000 car. Rudy is my creditor. I have an agreement with Rudy because she has extended credit to me, and I have agreed to pay Rudy whatever contract we have with payment terms. I have agreed to pay Rudy back the $45,000 based on the contract. All right? That is, Rudy is my creditor. Now, it goes further, but there's a word but, okay? But, that's a key word, but. That means we're going to make a transition. Something's changing. Something's changing about who a creditor is, okay? The word but. Such term does not include, okay? So here's a transition. Does not include any person to the extent that he or she, I inserted the she, receives an assignment or transfer of a debt in default. I'm pausing there. There's no comma or anything, but I'm pausing. I'll read that again. But such term does not include any person to the extent that he receives an assignment or transfer of a debt in default. Okay, and then it says solely for the purpose of facilitating collection of such debt for another. All right, so, all right, you know what? I've been making my car payments to Rudy, and I've been timely payments, so why does that have anything to do with me? And, you know, we're not talking about everybody's not in default. You know, I'm not, everybody's not in default. Everybody's paying their things timely. I have a lot of people that are still paying their obligations timely. So what does that mean? How does this apply to them? Okay, first, let's talk about the people that are not in default, and we'll go to the people that we'll talk about the people who are in default, and then we'll talk about the people who are not in default. Okay? So my payment is due to Rudy on the, let's say, the 5th of the month. I have timely paid Rudy. I paid her on the 1st, 2nd, the 3rd, the 4th, the 5th of the month. No, I said untimely, right? Okay, I'm sorry. I paid Rudy after the 5th of the month. I paid Rudy maybe the 6th of the next month, okay? I'm 31 days behind, okay? I'm behind. What do we mean when we say default? Rudy or Lori, what does default mean? What does default mean?
It's not defined. Except for in your contract, it's the two people, the two contracting parties determine the definition of default. Everything in the scope of your definitions, everything in the scope of your transaction is defined, outlined, and designed in your contract. If you look at any of these regulations and statutes, default's not defined. What is default? The contract default in your contract will say one day after or on the 5th of the month or XYZ, XYZ, XYZ. That's why reading it on your words and your terminology is so, so important, just like whenever you were talking about the butt. You know, you need to remember that song, I like big butts and I cannot lie, because that butt right there, that butt pulls it back in and gives you, you know, and when you hear the word not, you know, you need to look at those words and you need to realize that those are stoppers there. Let me tell you something here, and let me make it really clear. They're really bringing it home for you. But default is really, like Cherie says a lot, you're the only existing party. You're the only existing witness to that contract. And it's up to you. What is default?
So you mean to tell me if I have a payment date on the 5th and I pay it on the 7th, depending on my contract, I could still be in default?
It depends on what your contract says. If your contract says that your payment is due on the 1st and you are considered in default after that, then that's default.
The contract governs.
The contract is superior law. It is the governing party to which these any debt collector or creditor using, it is their tool to use to come after you. It is what they're waving around and they're saying, oh, but I've got this right here. It says right here that I can foreclose on you, or it says right here that I can do this, or it says right here that I can demand payment. But really, when you sit down for a minute and you breathe and you look at it, it doesn't say that right there.
But wait a minute.
It doesn't say that you can collect that.
I just signed this contract with Rudy. And so, you know, I signed the contract and it said, you know, you've got a 10-day grace period. So I'm like, okay, cool. You know, my payment's due on the 5th, and I have until the 15th to make a payment before I get assessed a late charge.
That's to assess a late charge, right? That's
right.
Defining when your late charges are due. That's not defining when default is.
Oh, really?
Right? Okay. Right?
So.
And whenever you look at, like on these mortgage contracts or whatever, I'm trying to find mine right now so that I can read exactly.
Well, while you're looking for it, let me comment on it while you're looking for it. One of the things that you'll find a lot of times when we're dealing with the debt arena, and especially a lot of people are caught up with the foreclosure thing, is that's what the judge will say. Did you sign this contract? Or you'll press around with the word covenant. Well, did you sign it? And within that, it says, like you said, the default is this. Are you in default? Is it one day, 2 days, 3 months? The default is defined in the contract. That's why we tell people, read your contract. That's your governing law. That's what you signed. That's what they're bringing you to court on, is that contract. And the definitions within that contract, because they're defined in your contract. It tells you what a lender is, what a this is, what a that is, what the default is, when the default happens.
Yeah, but check it. Here's the thing, that within that contract, I mean, even whenever the judges, whenever they're saying, did you sign this contract, it doesn't matter if I signed that contract, Judge. You know, GE Capital over here, or Soteris Inc., or Nation Star, or J.P. Morgellons Disease over here, I didn't sign a contract with them.
Right?
I'm confused. I'm sorry. I'm so confused. Please help me understand this, okay? Because we went from my elevator's not going up to the top, okay? I mean, seriously, okay? We are talking about, I talked about the late fee, okay? I know I'm talking for somebody out there, so I'm trying to help you understand, okay? So we're trying to get this straight, okay?
Okay, let me read this real quick, okay, Layla?
Okay, all right.
Okay, on your notes, all right, I've got a real basic note, all right? It'll say, in Section 6 of my note, borrower's failure to pay as required. Subsection A, late charges for overdue payments, and it goes over that. If the noteholder has not received the full payment of any monthly payment by the end of 15 calendar days after the date is due, will pay late charge to the noteholder in the amount of XYZ. That's defining my late charges, how that's calculated, when it's due, how it's due, right?
Mm-hmm.
Subsection B, default. If I do not pay the full amount of each monthly payment on the date it is due, I will be in default. However,
Bingo. Okay.
Did everybody hear that?
Repeat that again, Lori.
Subsection B, default. If I do not pay, there's that not. If I do not pay the full amount of each monthly payment on the date it is due, I will be in default.
Okay. So let's go back to this. That's what we were looking for, and I pray that everybody got what Lori just said, okay? And you heard what Rudy said. It's based on the contract, and the contract is superior. All right, so that's why you need to pull out your documents, and you need to look at your own documents. You don't want to be looking at somebody else's documents. You know, we hear about this cutting and pasting and all this kind of stuff that's going on out there. Every case is different, all right? Your case is different from my case. My case is different from Lori's case. My case is different from Rudy's case, okay? You've got to look at your own documents, okay? And it defines what default is, all right? So just because you were told that you've got a grace period and you know, and you're fine as long as you meet that grace period doesn't mean that you're not in default. That means that you could be in default. You got to look at your contract to determine that, all right?
And that term was agreed upon by the creditor and the borrower, right?
Correct. Correct.
Not the so-called servicer.
Okay.
We're not there yet.
Remember that. Remember what Lori just said. We'll get back to that point. You can reiterate that point, Lori, okay? That's a very valid point. Creditor, because we're on creditor, okay? And we're talking about default. So let's just redefine this, okay, so we make sure that we're all on the same page, and then we can move forward, and we'll clarify that point, okay? The creditor means any person who offers or extends credit, creating a debt, or to whom a debt is owed, all right? So we already talked about how I borrowed money from Rudy. Rudy is my creditor, all right? But It says, but it does not include any person to the extent that he receives an assignment or transfer of a debt in default. All right? So if let's talk about this. Now, Rudy takes and transfers the loan. She decides that she doesn't want to be in this arrangement anymore. And she has a right to do that, mind you. And she decides that she does not want to be in this transaction anymore, and she decides that she's going to sell her right over to Lori.
Cherie. I was giving the money to Cherie.
Oh, no, I'm talking about my car loan, okay? My car loan with Rudy.
I got you.
Okay, so Rudy sells my loan.
You sell it to me. I'm collecting from nine of its people. Bye.
Rudy sells that assigns it, you know, assigning to me means selling, okay, but she assigns it, she sells it over to Lori, okay? Now, I don't even know that this arrangement has been made. You know, I've been making my payments to Rudy, right? And then all of a sudden, I get a notice that I'm not supposed to pay Rudy any longer, and I'm for now supposed to pay Lori on my car. Okay, what just happened? All right, now if my contract if my payments, you know, when they made this arrangement, my payment is due on the 5th. And what Lori just said in the contract that she just read, that is hers, that says that payment is in default. She's in default if the payment is not received by the due date, which is the 1st. But let's use my example. My example is the 5th. My payment is not made by the 5th. Okay, well, let's talk about it. It's not made by the 5th. My payment is not made, and Rudy just transferred my automobile loan over to Lori, and my payment has not yet been made, then I am in default. Therefore, Lori is not my creditor. Rudy is no longer my creditor, all right? But now that Lori has sent me documentation to say that I'm supposed to pay her, I should really pause and say, okay, who are you, and why should I pay you? Now you've got the power of the FDCPA by virtue of USC 1692A4 to say that if my debt is in default by way of your own contract, then there's no obligation for me to pay Lori. All right, now let's say my payment came in on the 7th. Well, if that transfer happened on the 6th, oh, well, too sad, too bad, Miss Lori. You are not a creditor. You are a debt collector. But if my payment was made on the 5th and that was transferred on the 6th, then Lori would be my creditor, and she would be entitled to me paying her as a creditor, potentially. Okay, there might be some other, you know, we don't know, but I'm just saying, based on that definition, we're just going to stay with the pure definition. Based on that, if I was in default, Lori is not my creditor. She's now transitioned to being a debt collector, because it says, for the purposes of facilitating collection of such debt for another. That is the transition. And that is really key and pivotal to any and all of these debt collection actions that are being brought against the people. You need to understand USC 1692A4. That's why when you hear Brother Sharif say, okay, are you a creditor or are you a debt collector? Okay, under A4. And you need
and
to know that by
I pose everybody's a debt collector.
That's correct. The industry has been deregulated, so everybody's having a free for all. It's a frenzy.
That's right. That's right. Swapping. They're getting crazy out there.
You hear the terminology in the news. What credit swap? I just lost the terminology.
Credit swap default.
Yeah, something like that. So.
Credit default swap.
Yes, credit default swap. Thank you, Rudy.
There you go.
You're welcome.
So if you hear that terminology, credit default swap, that's exactly what's happening. They're going crazy, loony-toony with it, and that's what's happening with pretty much all the debt around the country. So this act is our protection against being oppressed.
And they have made a killing off of doing that. They've really created an industry off of doing that. And I think it was like it was either 1999 or 1998. I haven't read that, but that was whenever they lifted that and they were able to get crazy with the securities exchanging with all the Glass-Steagall Act.
I don't recall if that's the actual act, but it was around that time period. I do know that.
It was under Clinton.
Yeah, I can't go that deep. I just know it was around 1999, 1998. That was early in my studying, and whenever I was doing all the exploring and learning and trying to figure all this out. And I was like, oh, those little crazy hounds. There you go.
Yep. Okay, so the next definition we're going to go over is debt. Okay, that's 15 U.S.C. 1692A5, also known as A5. And debt means any obligation any obligation or alleged obligation, okay? Alleged, any or alleged of a consumer, okay, we just talked about a consumer, to pay money arising out of a transaction in which the money, the property, insurance or services which are the subject of the transaction. Okay, so there was some sort of a transaction which involved money, property, insurance, or services. It doesn't say what kind of services, any kind of services, of which the transaction are primarily for. Okay, so primarily for. 1, personal, 2, family, or 3, household purposes. That's what a debt is, whether or not such obligation has been reduced to judgment. All right? So a debt is any obligation or alleged obligation in which there is money, property, insurance, or services that was a part of the transaction used primarily for personal, family, or household reasons. Okay, would that include your car? Is that a personal? Or for your family, is your house personal, family, a household? Does that fall under any of that category? Your credit cards, personal, family? If you buy household goods, I mean, does that fall under a debt? That's what we're talking about when we talk about the protections afforded by this act. Any questions, any comments?
That means everything you buy on supposed credit, that means anything, your home, your car, your tires, the blankets on your bed that you put on your MasterCard, that means your insurance, that means any services that you've went out and purchased, all of it. Blankets under debt, all of that. And anytime you see the word any and alleged, it's just like that but, where you like big but. You got to love some any and some alleged. Those are two really beautiful words in these statutes. Any is a strong word. Any obligation. Any.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Or alleged. And that's when someone's calling my phone for Layla's alleged debt.
But she doesn't know that to be the case. She doesn't even know me.
That's right.
It's alleged.
That's right.
It's alleged that I have that debt. It's just amazing.
That's right.
It's amazing.
Right. Right on.
All right. So we. Okay, so a debt collector, okay, this is a long definition, but we're going to read it, and then we're just going to encapsulate it for you because it's really, you need to take the time to really spend and dive into this, but it makes it really, excuse me, really simple once we understand the other definition. A debt collector means any person who uses any, there's that word any person, any person, okay, any person who uses any instrumentality of interstate commerce or the mails, meaning mail, you know, mailbox, mails in any business, the principal purpose of which is the collection of any debts, or who regularly collects or attempts to collect directly or indirectly debts owed or due or asserted to be owed or due another. Notwithstanding, you know, when we read this, I'm like, notwithstanding. Oh, here are these words. Oh, my gosh.
It's like a mini, mini mine train. You're
clicking
up, getting on a roller coaster. Click, 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 click. Oh, here we go.
Yep, here we go. Okay, notwithstanding.
Here we go.
Really. Notwithstanding the exclusion. Where am I? Provided by clause F of the last sentence of this paragraph, the term includes any creditor who, in the process of collecting his own debts, uses any name other than his own, which would indicate that a third person is collecting or attempting to collect such debts. Okay, I'm going to pause. That was a big mouthful.
Uh-oh.
That was really a big mouthful. So let's just slice and dice this, okay? Bottom line, a debt collector is anybody other than the creditor. We just talked about the creditor. Rudy was the creditor. That means that a debt collector, when my automobile loan was transferred to Lori, I was delinquent, okay? So now Lori is coming to me in Rudy's name, saying that I owe her money when I was delinquent. Okay, that's debt collection. All right?
And I'm using any instrumentality.
Yes.
I'm using any instrumentality. I'm leaving notes on Layla's door. I'm sending her stuff in the mail. I'm pretending like I'm Frank when I'm not Frank. I'm calling. I'm calling her neighbors, I'm putting stuff, I'm doing it all. Any instrumentality, any instrument, any tool.
Okay, so for those of you who are in foreclosure or alleged, let me just correct myself. Alleged,
well,
you put yourself in alleged foreclosure, you're not in foreclosure. I actually, and we hear people come on the line and say, you know, I'm in foreclosure. Well, now you have a debt collector. Okay, let's just keep it plain and simple. You have a debt collector knocking on your door some way, somehow, through any means of instrumentality, any instrumentality, okay? And they are coming after you as if they are Rudy, okay? And they're not Rudy.
Well, what they're
facing.
And
they're using fear and intimidation and all these tactics and they're causing you to flee out of your places, you know, causing you to just turn over the keys to your vehicles or what have you because you just are under such duress because you don't understand these statutes. These statutes arm you with the power to stand on truth and move in the direction that will squash them like a bug underneath your foot.
That's right. That's when you realize that you are not in foreclosure. You are in Thor, THOR closure. You are in Thor closure. You have been educated, and you can Thor close on their asses. You can take them down the track. You can flip the script. You can turn the tables. You can yank it on them. You can change the lanes that they're driving in. You can take them out of the Tila Respa cover umbrella that they're hiding in, seeking in. lurking in the dark and trying to come after you using those things, and you yank their tail feathers straight back over there and throw them in the debt collection arena.
All right, let me interfere for a minute, if I would. And y'all doing a great job. The chat had a couple of questions I wanted to address.
Oh, good, great.
And the question was, what if the loan was assigned or transferred to another entity while not in default? This is from Rich Meng, RBG. I just want to clarify that for everyone. But let's say if someone does acquire your debt while it is current and it subsequently becomes in default, they become debt collectors once it goes into default. Want anybody understand that? So you're current on your mortgage payments, you're current on your credit card payments, they assign it while it's current, and then subsequently you go into default. From the time it is in default, they become debt collectors. They're collecting the debt while it's in default. And there's plenty of case law out there in cases that the courts have decided based on that very fact. It's the way they treat the debt, okay? If they're treating the debt as if it is in default, they are still considered debt collectors. So I wanted to clean that up. Of course, it was a question as to what code of the title in 15 U.S.C. 1692. We're talking about A1 through A6, specifically four of the categories within those definitions. And let's see. When there's a webinar on federal civil procedure coming. Soon. Soon. As soon as the calls start to progress into people ready. I'm not like, you know, other people or other groups, not knocking them in any way, but I just don't, if y'all notice, Brother Shreve, I don't sling the word sue them around. Because I don't put people into positions they're not able to handle. I think you have to first make the transition in the mind. And as long as I keep getting calls about fear of taking someone to court, when they'll put you in the street or they'll put you into poverty and you're scared to use a law that you are able to read as many times as you like, do some research and be able to ascertain that, you know, normal consumers, and when you read the act in its entirety, it'll say it's for the least sophisticated, unsophisticated consumer. So a lot of you fit that profile. Some of you have exceeded your knowledge beyond that point. But until the fear is gone, I mean, we don't need to talk about the federal rules. That's some background noise, somebody. And until, you know, we have an understanding of what it is and be able to speak about it front and back, then we'll get into the federal rules and how that works. Meanwhile, you can read it on your own. And the federal rules is very long, and you will only use certain portions of it. It's a lot in there. So, you know, that's what Thor is for, is to condense the information and be able to extrapolate the parts that you will utilize the most. That's about it. Okay, so that's all the questions. In many cases, the courts aren't making the banks validate or authenticate anything, even when challenged, ruling on nothing, and a sweep foreclosure under the rug. Yeah, I don't know about that, Roy T. You have to first understand what validate and authenticate is, and you know, you can find a way in or a way out. Definitely up to you. They can't validate or authenticate. I mean, so when you hear people say, well, I sent them a notice and they didn't respond, well, you think if they could respond, they wouldn't have and put themselves within the purview of a lawsuit. So obviously if they don't and they can't, I don't know. I'm a lion through and through, or if I was another sea animal, it would be a shark. When I taste blood or smell blood, I mean, I'm going to go in. If I ask you a question and you start dancing on me, I'm going to ask you that question again. So, you know, if they can't validate or verify the debt to your satisfaction, you have to know what the debt is. And you say, I don't recall that. Oh, you had a debt with Layla. I just don't recall that. Okay? And how do you know about it, and who are you, and what do you have to do with Layla, and when did I get this debt from Layla, and show me the documentation that supports that, and then how did you get it, and how much did you pay for it, and on and on and on. That's why the consumer protection laws is not about the debt, so I just don't understand. It tells me you're not reading it because it doesn't go into the quality of the debt. It goes specifically into the conduct and behavior. If you really want to read the FDCPA, and some of you, this is why I don't like questions unless you've read it, because people just pick one thing out and say, well, give me that. Oh, you read it to me and tell me what it means. Or did you read it? So when you really read the FDCPA, and I'm just going to go ahead and kind of cheat, when you read it and read it a couple of times and this is what you do for a living, you understand that the FDCPA was written as almost an impossibility for any debt collector to be successful. I'm going to just go ahead and tell you. That's why when you talk to attorneys and everybody else against it, and you talk about 1692I and all those kind of things, they don't want to talk about it. Why? Very cut and dry. It's to the point. You're not going to make a whole lot of billable hours about it. Validate or verify the debt. What is that? Well, just give me the name and address. Well, I'm telling you that name and address, that person is not even there. So if I ask you to verify or validate the debt and you bought it from somebody, who are you going to verify or validate it and bring that person to court because I disagree with what you're saying, either in part or entirely? So who are you going to validate or verify that debt with? So really, it's almost impossible the way the code is set up for them to be able to collect without violating. And the violation is not about the debt. It's about the conduct, and it's about the behavior. Okay? And we can talk about lack of standing, you know, related to sue, and, you know, again, you know, standing is an affirmative defense, but, I mean, okay, standing, and if they say, well, they are standing, then what? I mean, don't box yourself in. Again, you gotta learn it in its entirety and not focus on one or two points. You want to focus on one or two points if that allows you to hit the exit and just say, well, it doesn't work or I don't want to do it. And, you know, you're going to take that position anyway. So you have to read it, and if you don't read it, then you're not going to understand it. And there's many people out here that are not reading it, many people that don't understand it. And, you know, we're not going to focus much on those people. Again, this is an easy network, it's an easy class, it's an easy law to understand, and for those that read it, you'll have more questions in terms of your offensive action as opposed to your doubt about what the code does. I mean, we've given you too many examples at Thor of how many people win, are winning, and the amounts that can be won and has been won. So if you got 15 pages out there and you hear one person is able to get $18 million off of one of those codes, I really don't have anything to say to anybody about its validity and ability, because I put myself on equal par or exceeding anyone else in life, and I feel somebody found a way to get $18 million, I'm going to find that way to get it also. So it's finding a way in, not a way out. And that's it. I'll go back out, and I'm going back to eat this hyena that I just caught.
Thank you, Brother Shirley.
You know, a really good example of that, so that people can maybe clarify, because, like, let me just tell y'all out there, I was one of those least sophisticated consumers. I'm very simple. I've been in sales forever, and I'm just really good at you know, doing that was my lane. But I didn't educate myself, nor had I been educated on any of this stuff. So it really, you know, it took me a little learning curve. But a good example of that is everybody knows whenever you get some of those letters in the mail that says, you know, at the bottom of it, which is called your mini Miranda, that's supposed to be on there, that you're supposed to dispute the validity of the debt within 30 days in writing.
Well, right there, boom, that is a bad behavior. You don't have to dispute it in writing. That is a violation right there whenever you look in 1692G. You don't have to dispute it in writing. However, they're saying that you have to dispute it in writing. That was bad behavior. You confused me just then. You told me that I had to send you a dispute in writing, that I had to do, you know, things that I really didn't have to do. I could have been on the phone with you.
I'm going to share with you one more other thing where, like I said, many of you on this call know more than just about much of the legal society and the foreclosure bills out there. There was a case I was reading the other day that was interesting. There was an attorney who was a debt collector who a lot of times I see that they'll file foreclosure complaints and they'll put on the complaint or on the top of the complaint, they'll put, we are debt collectors attempting to collect the debt. And it'll be a foreclosure complaint. And, you know, in some jurisdictions, in some states, you know, there's a requirement, you know, requirement for you to respond to a complaint is 20 days. Well, they did a foreclosure complaint on this lady, and the attorneys put in there, this is an attempt to collect the debt, and they'll put that on there. They do it a lot in California, although it's non-judicial. Sometimes they have to take judicial foreclosures out there. They do it in many other states that are judicial, Florida, and they'll put on the heading, or somewhere on it, this is an attempt to collect the debt. And so in the state the lady was in, the time to respond to a lawsuit was 20 days. Well, when they put the mini Miranda, that requirement was 30 days, okay? So she sued. And she says, because I was required to file an answer before the time for me to dispute was up, and she won. Bunch of money just for that. And they do stupid things like that all the time. Also, another ambiguity that can be considered deceptive, that can be considered misrepresentation. You'll see a lot of times these attorneys or servicers, they will put on the document, we may be a debt collector. Okay? So what do you mean we may? Again, these are computers and they put, you know, they put these things on there, and they're tricky, and, you know, a lot of times they'll send you notices, and they'll be like, we're sending you this notice and this bill, but on the bottom, they're like, well, you know, if you're in bankruptcy, you're really not asking for money. Well, listen, if you send me a bill, I mean, either you're sending me a bill, which means you should look at it and know that I'm in bankruptcy if you're a creditor, you should have some notation on the account. If you send me a letter for a bill, that violates the permanent injunction in the bankruptcy, and that can cost you a good bit of money. So they're sloppy, and what I'm telling you guys is that they have to be sloppy. If you have a letter and it says, we may be a debt collector, well, how the heck is an unsophisticated, least sophisticated consumer going to be able to ascertain whether you are or not? Some of you on this show is not able to ascertain what a debt collector is. So if they put on there, you know, we may be a debt collector, you mean like you may. You're demanding money of me and a creditor says, then you're saying we may be a debt collector. That is a confusing letter, and that will definitely get you a win based on the consumer protection law. So those are little things that they do out there. They commonly do it because most attorneys, like I said, they don't know about the consumer protection laws. And, you know, they rather, you know, do 2 years of, you know, pleadings and fancy stuff and case ping pong and, you know, this and that because that's how they get paid. The consumer protection laws is real simple. They come real direct. So in those circumstances, they are not able to do a whole bunch of pleading, although sometimes they do. If they want to milk the debt collectors, then, you know, they'll run you around the court and take you the scenic route and see what you know, see if you know how to plead, see if you know how to write, see if you will engage them in Latin ping pong and try to pick up on their language. You know, as we discussed with Amira, we keep it real simple, intelligent. We make our intellect known, our legal intellect. We abide by the rules, but we don't do the case law thing. Cause like I said, many times you can find 50 cases that'll support what you say, and you can have 50 cases that'll support what the opposing party will say. That's really absolutely nothing, unless you have Supreme Court case law. Other than that, you know, those are judges' opinions. All right, and everybody has opinions. You understand? So you know, you don't need to play that. The consumer protection law is just for the normal average guy. And when I say normal average guy, that means that you take a normal average consumer protection law and you read it. And if you read it, I'm just telling y'all, it's not difficult. I know the questions that we get from people that don't read it. I know there are people that hear it and don't read it because your program as a Pentium 10 chip, meaning you think everything is complex and difficult and, you know, everything has zigzags in it and you need a race car, NASCAR to, you know, to navigate in the commercial lane and, you know, all of that. It's really not, I'm not going to say it's easy, but it's very simple. So just wanted to say that. Also, one other thing is just, again, understanding default. I mean, if you're in default, they're a debt collector, and this is simple. I want to say one more thing. I kind of want to get into a couple of articles because we're in the two-hour mark. So I want to get into a couple of articles to demonstrate to you guys another trick that is going around, and that's the servicer game. You know, I hear people say a lot, you know, my servicer or my lender. And you hear people commingle the two. Well, they're debt collector, but then they're a servicer. But then my servicer said this, and my servicer say that. I keep relabeling everybody accordingly, and I do it for you. And if somebody's doing it for you, you should just adopt it if you're able to read it. Now, some of you have a lot of faith in a lot of things. You believe a lot of stuff that's out there that you can't even put your finger on, and many times you can't even read or pull up. So what I'm telling you is a servicer is almost always going to be a debt collector. Why? Because they're collecting either on behalf of someone else, okay, if they're not collecting their own debt, okay, they're collecting on behalf of someone else, okay? So the new thing out here is because we have so many defaulted mortgages, the new thing is to continue to promote the term servicer because it appeals to everyone's ear. It's one of those contractual terms and words that is used that invokes the contractual agreement that was between a consumer, a borrower, a mortgagee, mortgagor. So they use that word because you're familiar with it. But when you look around, and any of one of you can do that, and if you want to take the time and be serious about it, you will. If you just Google NationStar and if you just Google GreenTree and some of the other companies, you will realize that there's a lot of buying of servicing rights. We talk about Warren Buffett. He bought servicing, allegedly. They term it servicing rights from the bankruptcy court. A lot of debts go into bankruptcy, and, you know, they shake them up. You know, bundle them and sell them. Why? Because you don't know who went into bankruptcy. And they buy that debt and, you know, there's no chain of title saying that it went into the bankruptcy and came out. You know, another thing that I tell people to look at, and when you start getting into securitization, I really just break it down real clear. Securitization is you see those assignments going to these trusts years later. What does that tell you? Well, it tells you a couple of things that many people don't mention, even the securitization providers that deem themselves knowledgeable in that particular arena. The most important factor of the late assignments to these REMICs is that from the time you executed that loan and note, it was sold into a REMIC, meaning that for those years that you were unaware that the REMIC owned that loan, the servicer, or many times the servicer and the lender continuing the masquerade, you were paying them. Follow me. You were paying them. So if you were paying them for 3 to 5 years and you were under the impression that they were the mortgagee or the creditor and they held themselves out that way, but at all times relevant, they were sending that money to the REMIC, I don't know what you're not getting. Those are actual damages. You were always a debt collector, and you never said that because I executed the loan and agreement with you, and you just, you know, many times they did tell you, let me just say that sometimes they did. Many a time you got a letter saying that, hey, we appreciate your, sometimes it was weeks later, hey, we appreciate your business, Bank of America is now your servicer. And you got that one letter, and you threw it away, and you thought it was just like a hello letter or a thank you for coming letter and doing a loan with us, but there was a shift that occurred. And they can probably prove they sent you that letter, and you just didn't pick up on it. So, and then sometimes they didn't send the letter at all. But what they should have sent you was a letter saying, we're your servicer now, and this is your new principal, the remit. But they didn't do it. So every payment you made is actual damages that you should be able to recover under what? The FDCPA. Okay? Because there was no disclosure. It was a misrepresentation. Because I'm thinking I'm paying and you're paying someone else. All right? That's one. Two is that when you're dealing with these remits, you just have to understand that these audits that you get are, first of all, you're not going to understand them. And I question a lot of you that get them and act like you don't understand the FDCPA, FCRA, and the TCPA, but you brag that you have an audit, a securitization audit, that I know you do not understand securities and exchange law, trust law. I'm telling any one of you that have one, you never called your securitization service provider and say, can you explain this to me? Because I know very few that really know how to explain it. Okay? Explain it to where you would understand it. Okay? Now, all of you talk about fear. How many of you are going to be comfortable going to court and start engaging the judge and the attorney about remics and trust law and securitization? But you do it. And some of you still ordering them. Some of you are still getting them. And some of you act like you just got the new pair of jeans that's in style by stating that you have one. But if I told you to pull it out and read it, you wouldn't have a damn idea what you're reading. But then you look at the FDCPA and you say that's too easy. Or you don't read it at all. So, you know, again, this is mindset, and that's all it is. But in talking about some recent articles, the servicer word is being used as a mask for debt collectors, because you don't buy servicing rights. I'll give you an example. When you went and executed your loan with, let's say, you know, a Bank of America or Chase Bank or any one of those, you know, they had servicers. They had servicers when you went there. Okay? They always did, correct? Do you think those servicers that they had working for them bought their way into Bank of America? Do you think they paid to work there for the creditor? Let's think about it for a minute. No. Bank of America said, look, we're lenders. We just lend money. That's all we do. We handle the money. We make the loans happen, allegedly, okay? And then we have servicers that take care of the payments and all the little maintenance stuff and everything else, questions that the people may have. You know, I'm money bags. I'm the creditor. I don't have time to deal with that crap. I hire people to handle that. So they are servicers. They don't have to pay me to work there. For them servicing my loans, I pay them a percentage for handling my business. Okay? That's what happens. So that's a relationship that is already there when you're a lending institution. You have to have servicing. Okay? If you're a service provider, someone like your cable company, you have in-house collections department, or they may call them loss mitigation departments, or they may call, or collections departments. They have them. Why? Do you think they bought into working at the company? No, it's the cost of doing business. Look, we provide cable, and then some people are not going to pay their bills, so we have to have a loss mitigation department or a collection department to collect on the ones that don't pay. It's the cost of doing business. We pay them a salary. We build it in to our costs. So when you see a lot of the shenanigans where you see these services talking about we bought $50 billion in servicing rights, you need to understand what they're saying. We bought $50 billion in defaulted debt, no different than the debt buyers. That's all they did, because you cannot buy into servicing something. Okay? This absolutely makes no sense. You don't buy into servicing. Okay? So I'm going to read with you an article that sort of supports what I just said so you'll have a full understanding of what I'm saying. Okay? This article is on the Huff Post. All right, it's titled Bailout Economic Predators Still Fattening on Prey. And I'm going to read most of it. It says almost 6 years ago after the financial crisis, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Bank of America faced potential fines of around $12 billion for each of their role in mortgage malfeasance. In the context of the damage done and the bailout money poured into the banks, the fines are minuscule and won't even cover reparations in one or two blighted areas. This is a series of post-crisis banking scandals revealing the fragility of the banking system after J.P. Morgan Chase was the only bank to receive SEC fines combined with admission of wrongdoing for its well-publicized London Whale incident, all right, LIBOR code, all right, manipulation of the interest rates, okay? So as you can see, everything is manipulated. And then it goes on to I wanted to get into the information that was relevant to me and important to you. It went into the housing market devastation. And it spoke about one of the CNBC investigators that called about Countrywide so-called plan to modify mortgage loans scheduled to reset to higher rates. Okay? It said, and this was in 07. All right, this is when Countrywide was around. It says some prime borrowers with a strong payment history would be able to refinance and possibly get prime FHA loans. Current paying borrowers with credit issues would be offered Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loans under a new extended program. It says mortgage loans with less than zero value. Mortgage modification programs, including HAMP, were dismal failures. Okay? It says at the time, mortgage servicers, listen closely, were selling loans for 3 to 6 cents on the dollar, and they were happy to dump them. Now, I'm going to take that sentence there because you have to read with understanding. And how is it that a mortgage servicer is able to sell loans? How can a mortgage servicer sell loans? Okay? I keep telling y'all that the boogeyman thing works. It works in terrorism. It works in many other ways. It works in the consumer arena because they always say there's some boogeyman creditor that you never get to talk to. You never hear from. And I'll give you an example why you never hear from. Some of you have done modifications. Okay? You've done them. So you've gotten letters, and it says, oh, we're the trustee of the REMIC 123 ABC Element OP. And it says they own your loan, and they send you a nice little colory letter with a purple booty print on it maybe, or knuckle print or footprint, and it'll say, just want to do a modification, right? And let's say you were dealing with BAC Home Loans, and they said, oh, your boogeyman creditor is the trustee for the REMIC ABC 123 and BAC servicer, meaning that they're a debt collector, right? And you're in default, meaning they're a debt collector. And so then they send you a modification, and you get the modification paperwork, and you fill it out, and it's no mention of the REMIC that they said was the creditor. And essentially, you modify with BAC Home Loans. Bank of America. Well, where did the boogeyman go? The trustee for the REMIC ABC 123. How would you be modifying with them when they said that there was a boogeyman creditor around and it was the REMIC? Well, what happened to the REMIC when you signed paperwork and you didn't read? Again, many of you did modifications. Don't tell me you didn't know about all these settlements and all this fraud and all this other kind. Don't tell me you didn't know. And don't tell me that it really would have been responsible for you to say, you know, let me read this paperwork. And you didn't see the word waive in that paperwork probably 20 or 30 times. And you admit in there probably 10 or 15 times. but you didn't see the boogeyman creditor that they said existed, and you modified and made the servicer slash debt collector now the creditor. That's what you did. Now, for those of you that may not have known about it, well, go back and read it. Go back and pull your assignment and tell me, where did the boogeyman creditor Remick go? Where are they? How did you modify with a servicer that said there was a creditor and they were working for the creditor, but then once you applied to the servicer and gave the servicer a brand new loan with for another 30 years. And so you took a debt collector who paid pennies on the dollar, who is not a national banking institution, you understand, who's not subject to any of the settlement agreements, okay? They're not subject to them because they're not national banking institutions. They're not governed by the Office of their Supervision. So they're just LLCs, Nation Star. They're not a national banking institution. Green Tree, they're not a national banking institution. So you took a debt collector who paid pennies on the dollar, who doesn't have a computer that looked like a banking computer, and you turned them into mortgagees by signing a 30-year agreement with them for interest rate, full amount of what you were owed, what was owed to the other person that they only paid pennies on a dollar for. And now you turn them into a billion-dollar business because there's plenty of people doing it. Okay? Just think about that for a minute. But they sold the loans for 3 to 6 cents on a dollar, and they were happy to dump them. They worked 13-hour days trying to salvage what they can, doing anything to avoid reporting a delinquency or foreclosure. Okay? They disclosed disturbing information available even on trustee reports. The servicer asserted the rating agencies are incorrect in their optimism. Recovery rates of 60% are unattainable, and my average recovery rate assumption of 30% is also currently unattainable. So what they're saying is that, you know, when they bought these debts, you know, it was said that, you know, they'd be able to recover 60% of these debts. Okay? Get 60% of you to start doing modifications or paying them. And they said that was unattainable, okay? And they said even 30% was unattainable, okay? So if loans couldn't be sold to a sucker, banks and their servicers walked away. So look, they walked. It's a lot of houses, Chicago and many other places where, you know, Ohio, where they were just foreclosing and they just left them. Why? Because there's insurances tied up when they conduct the foreclosure. There's money to be made for the legal society for doing it, okay? And there's a overwhelming perception that you lost the house, all right? Mortgage securitization complicated matters, and often homes are left vacant and not foreclosed upon. Looters strip vacant properties of pipes, fixtures, and salvage anything of value. The loans within the securitizations are worthless. It's not my words. I'm reading. That's the article from the HuffPost. Loans within the securitization are worthless, okay? So you're paying more for these securitization audits, and I'm not saying they're not useful. Certain parts of it are useful, but not the ones I've seen, okay? You don't need a pooling and service agreement because you're not going to – you don't even read 15 pages of the FDCPA. You're going to read 393 pages? Please, stop kidding yourself, all right? So why do banks and trustees pretend these loans have value? Banks and trustees. We talk about trustees of these alleged remics. I want you to write one thing down. I want you to write an ABS form, 15G, for those of you that are serious, or may have some remics alleging to be your creditor. Right? ABS form 15G. Now, this is a requirement by the Securities Exchange Commission through the Dodd-Frank Act that these remics, instead of sitting there not having any information from the time they were formed, to give an update and show how many loans they had to buy back, what's the current value of those pools, and things of that nature. It's a form that they must file. Okay? So before you go ordering those audits, just go go on the SEC like some of you do. You go on there and look for the remix and look for the ABS Form 15G. That'll tell you the condition and status of those remix. And that can be used as evidence to show that, first of all, it's not going to have any loan numbers on it. All right? So let me go forward. At first, this was a problem for low loans. Okay, well, let me go back to it. If lenders foreclosed, it would be revealed that the taxes, cost to maintain the property before resale, and the legal cost relative to the value of the property meant that they had negative equity. Well, that's all of them. At first, this was a problem for loans with low balances, but as property values dropped, even loans with higher balances had the same problem. The problem spread, and it hasn't yet stopped spreading. Okay? And they use Chicago as an example. All right? Countrywide broke the law. It would be easy to, and a lot of you have Countrywide, it would be easy to turn away from this and blame the borrower. Some of the borrowers were absentee landlords who knew nothing, who knew what they were doing. Some borrowers overreached. But in many cases, people were victimized by predatory lenders. For example, a complaint of alleged fraud was filed against Goldman Sachs, filed by Lanes Bank, Batten, and Wurtenbaum, includes allegations of fraudulent practices by Countrywide, now owned by Bank of America. All right? In other cases, sophisticated investors have been able to win large settlements since material information that only the underwriter knew was withheld from the investors. So they're showing you that they screwed the investors who really funded these loans. That's why you can never admit that you received the loan from anybody. What's on those documents is not the Bible. You should know that by now. It has to be proven. Okay? So you don't know who you got a loan from. And if your loan was attempted to be securitized and sold into the secondary market, then that's a pretty good indication that the people on that paper didn't loan you anything. All right? So as for the underlying mortgage loans, a former Countrywide employee stated that approximately 90% of all liar loans that allowed reduced documentation about borrowers' income and assets sold out of the Chicago office had inflated incomes. Well, we know that. Countrywide settled a Moshi State lawsuit for $8 billion, including settlement with Illinois for predatory lending practices. Well, we know that. All right? So that's just some of the issues that are going on that, you know, a lot of times they don't want to foreclose on you, which is why I always say they'll do the modification with you because you have negative equity. They don't want to maintain the property. You don't want to pay the taxes. And then if they leave it there, the homeowners association, they're going to get greedy and throw their liens on there because the grass is a quarter of an inch too high. So they're going to put liens on there and then the taxes and then the upkeeping and then cleaning them out and then maintaining them and just, you know what I'm saying? It becomes too expensive. So it's easier to hoodoo you and say, look, if we can buy it for 5 cents on a dollar and charge you a whole dollar and then get you to sign an agreement to pay us a dollar plus interest on a dollar for the next 30 years, why should we take it? I try to realize what's going on. Make your own decision. I want you to realize what's going on. All right? So that's what's going on with that. I want to share one more other thing with you. You know, I was looking to... let me go into this. Auckland and Nation Star Mortgages. The business of collecting mortgage payments is undergoing a transformation as large banks retreat from the $9.2 trillion market and regulators investigate non-bank servicers. Now listen to what I just said. Okay? This is on Bloomberg, and it's entitled Gain Share in Auckland Nation Star Rivalry Mortgages. Okay? And read what I just said. The business of collecting mortgage payments is undergoing a transformation as large banks retreat from the $9.4 trillion market and regulators investigate non-bank servicers. The two large non-bank operators, Auckland and Nation Star Holdings, both lost market share in the first quarter, while Walter Investment enlarged its loan holdings to $234 billion, according to company filings. Now, some of you have Auckland. and a lot of you have Aquan, and a lot of you have Nation Star. Okay? Now, this is what the article says, and this is what I've always said, and this is what I tell you to read and read with understanding. The article clearly said that the largest non-bank operators are Aquan and NationStar, but you all continue to call them bank services. And they're telling you here they don't have a damn thing to do with a bank. They're non-bank servicers. They don't come under the lending institution laws. They're just calling themselves servicers, in other words. They're debt collectors. So who is over them? The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And I'm telling you right now, they're digging in the pockets, taking your money on the laws that you should be using. So it tells you right there, they're not bank servicers, and you keep calling them that, and you keep letting them pretend. And it's saying that they lost market share. Okay? The huge shift in servicing from banks to non-banks has created a landscape that's rapidly changing. Okay? No one can know the winners and the losers will be until the dust settles. Walter Investment had a 2.4% share of the servicing market in the first quarter compared with Aquan's 4.5% and NationStar 3.9%, according to Bloomberg data. Wells Fargo and Company led with 18%. Okay? The New York Department of Financial Services is investigating Aquan and NationStar. Why? They're debt collectors. Okay? And you have to be licensed, and they're getting so many complaints, especially in New York. New York has a financing department that handles, you have to be licensed through them. And if they get so many complaints with the omnibusmen and all that kind of stuff, then they start looking at allowing you to do business in their state. So being that you have big money bags, okay, Snyderman up there, Attorney General, who's been digging in the pockets of these debt collectors, I mean, heavy. He just got $500 million just a month or two ago, maybe. They start to look at Aquan and Nation Star and say, you guys are just straight thugs. We don't know if we're going to continue to let you do business in the state. And that's what they did. They held up a deal that Aquan was going to buy a lot more so-called servicing rights. Okay? So debt collectors' behavior is always going to be the behavior that's depicted in the FDCPA, conduct and behavior. They're thugs. They're not sophisticated. They got drunks, rehab people, people that have no character, that don't pay their bills, that don't know how to talk, and that's why the service is horrible. They don't know how to act like a banking. Bank of America would never have a servicer like Aquan and NationStar, and they don't, because they just told you it was non-bank services. But then in your documents, they say, well, Bank of America is your creditor, your boogeyman creditor, and NationStar is your servicer. You see the fraud there? You see, let me not say fraud. You see the deception? Okay? You said Bank of America was our creditor, and you purported to be, like, their servicer. Well, you're non-bank servicer. You have nothing to do with the bank. You're a debt collector. Okay? So, there was a letter sent to Aquan citing their concerns about potential conflicts of interest amongst four companies headed by Irby that provided mortgage-related services to each other. And a letter, NationStar, said that it was being probed by the impact of the rapid growth of homeowners and things of that nature. Aquan shrinks. Both companies have disputed the comments, saying that they have better performance records than the nation's biggest banks. Okay, so now they're comparing themselves to the boogeyman creditor banks that they say they work for. Doesn't take much to see through it. All right. Aquan's loan portfolio had dropped 3.2%. to $440 billion in the first quarter. And NationStar fell 7.5% to $384 billion. Now get those numbers? Why do you think they dropped? Well, more people are, hopefully, getting educated on the consumer protection law. They're being sued. But mainly, AQUIN, I mean, they had a settlement a couple of months ago, $4 billion, $7 billion over here, $10 billion over there. You know, every state is getting a piece of them. So now they're reluctant. And then throw the homeowners in, they're starting to sue them. Look, they're going down. Not far enough, but they're going down. So I wanted to share that, and I'll share one last thing with you. When we were talking about the other day, we were talking about Experian and the type of profits that they have. And I had a show on Equifax. And Equifax was, you know, I told you that their birth was in the 1700s, and they were the oldest. And I thought they were the most profitable. Well, they weren't, because I read an article the other day that, you know, they made $4.8 billion last year. That's a lot of money, okay? But I'm reading this article about the history of Experian, and you're just going to really find some awe in who they are and what they do. Experian was created in 1996, okay, by the GUS, a company called GUS. And GUS was a database that was commercialized in 1980, and they were called Commercial Credit Nottingham, CCN. And in 1996, GUS acquired U.S. credit reporting business Experian, formerly known as TRW. For those of you who've been around, you remember TRW Information Services. That's what it was before Experian. And guess where TRW Services, who owned them? When I tell you how the circle is small, GUS acquired TRW from Bain Capital. Now, if those of you follow a little bit of politics, you will know that Bain Capital was owned by Mitt Romney. Okay? Mitt Romney owned TRW Information Services. And then they merged into CCN, and during the next 10 years, you know, they kind of went into Latin America, Asia, Pacific, Eastern Europe. You know, I told you these credit bureaus are out of the country. They're everywhere. All right? So let me tell you some notable things that happened. Experian probably bought more companies than any bank that I know. Okay? Experian, in 2002, they bought a company called ConsumerInfo.com, which enabled them to start supplying credit reports to the consumers. Okay? And then they acquired, in 2004, they acquired Cheetah Mail, a business that was founded in 1988 providing email marketing software and services. Then they acquired QAS, a supplier of contact data management and identity verification solutions. In 2005, they acquired Price Grabber for $485 million. Also in 2005, they acquired Footfall, an information provider to the retail and retail property industries. Wonder where that information they get, your credit cards and all that information. And then they acquired in 2005, all in the same year now, okay, they acquired LowerMyBills.com for $330 million. Okay? Okay? That's almost $1 billion in acquisitions in 1 year experience. In September 2006, they announced the purchase of Northern Credit Bureaus in Quebec, Canada. In 2007, they required an initial 65% stake in Serasa, the market-leading credit bureau in Brazil, now the largest credit bureau in the world. Largest credit bureau in the world. The purchase price for the initial stake was $1.2 billion. So in 2 years, they spent over $2 billion on acquisitions. Okay? In 2007, they acquired a number of software companies, and they just went on to, and then they purchased Rent Bureau in 2010, which houses rental payment histories for over 7 million U.S. residents. This data will now be included in Experian, U.S. Consumer Credit Reports, as of January 2011. Okay? They purchased a majority stake in TechLightenment, okay, a part of Experian strategy to grow digital marketing capabilities. Then they acquired a 98% holding in Computatech, a credit service information provider in Colombia, for $380 million. And it goes on. I mean, it's another $10 billion in purchases. So let me get to this, and then I'll cut it here, to show you how vulnerable and how having these type of mega companies hold all your information is very dangerous. Experian subsidiary and data aggregator Court Ventures, okay, Court Ventures had court information in it, sold personally identifiable information on at least hundreds of thousands of Americans to a man in Vietnam who then resold the information through the identity fraud-enabling websites superget.info and findget.me. The information offered for anonymous sale on these websites included individuals' names, address, social security number, date of birth, place of work, duration of work, state driver's license number, mother's maiden name, bank account numbers, routing numbers, email account, and other account passwords. I read that story the other day. Okay? Experian subsidiary, Court Ventures. People who are $10 an hour employees, just got out of rehab, has access to all your information, and one of their subsidiaries was just selling all that information to a man in Vietnam. Some of you might travel to these countries and go to get some credit and probably realize you got some credit overseas. Don't be surprised. Social security number, date of birth, name, address, telephone number, duration of work, driver's license number, mother's maiden name, bank account number, bank routing numbers, email address, and passwords. And you have some idiots around here talking about I'm private. Okay? I mean, this is the information age that we're in, and you really cannot trust anything that a debt collector says, bureau says, that anybody says about debt, because all of you can be victims of identity fraud. And somebody could be using the information right now and got a house and paying it on time. You just don't know anything about it. All right? So you don't see that on the mainstream media. Why? Because Bain Capital, which is Clear Channel, is owned by Mitt Romney, who used to own TRW, which is now called Experian. You don't think he still has some stock in it? So you think he's going to put on the news on their corporate-owned news stations that Experian subsidiary sold this information to a man in Vietnam who then was selling it on the underground? All right? So you might go to Canada and they'd be like, no, Lori is already here. She's been here for 10 years. Who are you? No, we already have a Layla here in Canada. Who are you? You understand? This is real serious. You know, I've told you about the stories of, you know, there was an article on CNN about people getting your Social Security number and you know, and filing tax returns. That's happening to this day. $50 billion in the last couple of years, the IRS said we gave fraudulent tax returns. They say the crimes are so easy, Pookie and the drug dealers and them is not even selling drugs anymore. They're doing the tax thing. Getting your information. Now, how often do y'all give y'all information? My daughter had to go to the doctor the other day. They was asking Social Security number and all that, and we cash pay. What do you need that information for? I'm not giving you that information. What are you talking about? Everywhere you go, and the lady had to go get a manager to not be able to get the information. You're not getting that information. We're paying cash. What are you doing with that information? You don't need that information. You don't need it anyway. We are so used to giving our Social Security number, date of birth. We go to the store. Everything is a sale for the information. And you do not know what they're doing with that information, which is why you should take seriously suing anybody, which is why it is a crime and a felony for anybody to obtain your consumer credit report without a permissible purpose. Now, y'all take it as a $1,000 issue. It's way more than that to me when you got people over here in Vietnam that's selling your information. You don't think Pookie that just got out of jail, see your credit and your information and not use it, maybe file a tax return? Do you know how long there was on this article that I've seen these police officers had tax returns filled in their name? They're like, I can't, it took us, it ain't fixed yet. So then you call Experian, like we went over with the other article, when we read the lady that got the $18.6 million, and they say, oh, we're just going to pay that. We're just not going to fix the problem. And you call Experian. You say, listen, that was identity theft. Or think of the lady that called in last night. So, look, I closed that bank account. That wasn't us. We got cameras. We got a police report, and they're not taking it off. You understand? You have to fight with people about the truth. Somebody taking your information, but you got to understand that information. I say Target the other a few months ago. What did they say? They stole 2.8 million people's information. I have my conspiracy theories about those things. I just really think they're not stolen. I really think there's a governmental agency out there that's just collecting all of it. Okay, and they can crash any website out there. Your information is not safe anywhere. You should be incorporating, and you should be working under some LLC and not using your personal credit as much as you can, or monitoring your credit report. And if you're monitoring your credit report, I think you'll notice that there's some people residing in there that are strange to you. You never had a key to get in there into your credit report. And you should be dealing with them and evicting them and making them pay rent for the time they were in there. That is called actual damages. Punitive damages for them breaking into your consumer house and reading all of your mail, everything in your credit report from 1700 if they're looking at Equifax, or the 1990s if they're looking at Experian. Serious business. Okay? So that's all I had in terms of information. Just wanted to share that with you. And again, we share it because it's relative. It's important. We need to know the history of the law. We need to know the history of who these companies are and what kind of information they have. And that's all of them. I mean, the DMV, I'm sure, will be next. If you look up DMV in Florida, they made $12 million selling information, just selling information. And I've told y'all, DMV is not a state corporation. It is a private corporation like Equifax TransUnion. Notice that all of these companies that have your proprietary information, the information that ruins or controls your commercial life, are private corporations. It's not Homeland Security. It's not the Department of Labor. It's not the Social Security Administration. Okay? They're private corporations. No different than you walking in Walmart. It's like Walmart having your information. I have to understand that. I have to understand the laws of using those numbers and those Social Security numbers when you should and when you shouldn't. And you have to protect it and stop giving it out. And be careful with it. So I'm going to turn it back over to you, Layla. It's 1:30. And Laurie.
Okay, thank you so much for the street.
Good.
I wanted to ask you if there are any calls in the queue.
Yeah, well, some people in there. Oh, let's see. Yeah, you got a few in there. Let me open up the line and go to it. Let me start over here. Let's go to 469-6123. You're on Thor Radio. You have a question. 469-6123. All right. 240-2372. You're on Thor Radio. Your line is open. Do you have a question? All right. 678-5744. Do you have a question?
Hi, this is Tamara out of Atlanta. I want to say I love your radio show. I've only been on 2 days, and it's been empowering. And when I say I'm ready to fight, I'm ready to fight. But you gave me some nuggets last night. I was a lady with a banking problem, but you gave me some nuggets last night, and I couldn't find it, and I just needed it one more time. It's OSGA 101, and I couldn't hear the last part of it to look it up under the Georgia law.
OCGA.
Okay, OCGA, and it's 101-399. Okay, thank you so much, and thank you again for your uplifting information.
Thank you. All right, let's go to let's go to 502-8022.
502-8022.
Hey, how you doing, Brother Sheree?
Doing great. How are you?
Hello? Pretty good. Hey, I got my home loan sent to Nation Star, and every time you call to make a payment, it says that this is a Nation Star, you know, at times may act as a debt collector. So what should one do to start dealing with these guys?
Oh, well, that's a loaded question. I mean, that kind of question, I would just say you need to either read the consumer protection law or go into the archives and just, you know, that's a question that's far-reaching. Knowing what a debt collector
is. Well, I guess what I'm saying is, it's already understood that they're a debt collector.
I don't know. That all depends. I would say so, but you have to know that.
Right. Well, they're everything they say is that they're a debt collector.
Well, they said they may be a debt collector.
Well, that's deceptive. Either they are or they're not, right?
But it all depends. They may have some people that are current on their loans and they're not collecting a debt at that time.
Right.
You see what I mean? This is why I say have to know it for yourself. Go ahead.
If they're not a bank, and they're not a banking institution, and they bought, you know, the defaulted, because I got sick last year, and I guess, Bank of America dumped my loan into the group with the rest of them.
Yeah.
So that makes
I don't want people to get confused and think that, you know, it is not legal for a lender to transfer or sign a debt. That is not illegal. And it's not illegal for a debt collector to buy it and attempt to collect from you. That is not illegal. Okay?
Right.
I mean, if you got a good, they can buy a good debt. I mean, they can assign a good debt. It can transfer a good debt. I don't want people to just think that, as soon as they transfer or sign that, that's it, I'm done. No, I mean, you know, it all depends, the condition of the debt when they sold it and when they bought it. They buy good debt. They buy different levels of debt. They buy A paper, they buy C paper, they buy D paper, they buy current loans. You understand what I mean? In some instances,
My loan was in default at the time. So that makes them a debt collector.
You sure of that? You asking me or you telling me?
I'm telling you that my loan was in default at the time.
Well, that's better. I'll take that.
Right.
All right, so if they're a debt collector,
you need to
read 15 U.S.C. 1692, and you need to apply that science to your matter appropriately and start asking them certain questions and start looking at your assignments and start seeing what may be wrong with the life of your debt.
Right.
Start seeing what they're not telling you, because there's always something that they're not telling you.
Correct.
They may be a debt collector. They may not be a debt collector at all. When you listen to the story of Amin, you know, Amin Ra, they're not even debt collectors. That's what we said. Giving them the debt collector title is a promotion. They're not even that, looking at the paperwork. They're really nothing. But if we're going to govern them behind any law, we're definitely not going to govern them as a mortgagee or any relationship to a mortgagee. We're going to govern them by what? The Consumer Protection Law, the FDCPA. And we're going to obliterate them.
If they're nobody, then how do you find out who you're supposed to be paying? Because sounds like, you know, we're paying the wrong people if, you know.
That's everybody's individual responsibility. I don't know if they're nobody. Now, you're saying that. You have to know that. I wouldn't say nobody in that sense, because there's somebody that will put you in poverty or take your house if you don't know how to deal with it. Just telling you they're nobody, you have to figure out how they're nobody, what makes them nobody.
Right.
You have to read the documents. You have to look at the trail. Chain of title. You have to see where they became somebody and where they became nobody. Okay, there's somebody that is perpetrating some relationship with you, and you have to be able to not just talk about it, not just title it, but demonstrate that that is what it is. And until you have the full understanding of the FDCPA, you're not going to be able to do that. So where you need to start is right there at the FDCPA, and you know, step into your FCRA, your credit report, you know, pull your county recorded documents, and start putting the puzzle together, because it's going to be a puzzle.
Reported. Okay. Scanner reported document. All right. All right. Well, yeah, I'll just continue to listen. I just wanted to ask that question.
Appreciate you. Thank you, brother.
All right.
All right. Let's bring the Yama in and see what's going on with the Yama. I know she's going to kill me, Yama. Yeah, where you been? Where you been, boy? You ain't called me. You ain't. I just don't know what's going on with you.
Shalom, 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 Sue-Cherie. I know you're busy. I know you have the Thor ministry going. I know you do your research. And what I do, I'm always hearing from you anytime I turn into the program. And I just petition that everything that you have to get accomplished, that it gets accomplished. And that makes me, feel good.
Wow,
yes.
Great, brother. I always feel you in spirit. I always do. Matter of fact, I looked the other day and you weren't there. I felt empty. It's a feeling that I have. I've been like, you know what? I don't look. I've been like, come on, not even here. I don't even feel it.
Sometimes I have a different phone, and if I'm out and I try to get you on the phone, then it goes in and out. So, but I'm always there.
Okay,
I'm not
good.
Everywhere present, but I'm always there.
I'm always comfortable when you're there. So what do you think about the show so far? What did you pick up?
Oh, the show was very empowering. Layla, she laid it out. I mean, and she just went through from the beginning and building the foundation. And so no one has an excuse. You can't have an excuse and say, well, I didn't hear this and they didn't put it in the right order. No, it was all balanced, like a seesaw, weight on one side and a weight on the other, all balanced. I have a question. Well, I have a statement, really. And due to what Layla had stated and Lori had chimed in, and it was based on what happened last month. I had to pay a – something came up, you know, like I needed to get, you know, my sprinkling system fixed, right? And so – I had to get a new one. And so what happened is that I said, okay, every month I pay my mortgage like about 15 days ahead. I paid in the current month, but it's due the next month. And I said, okay, I can pay that a little later because I'm always paying it before it's due. And so I took out my little coupon book and I said, okay, it's due on the 1st. And it said I had 16 days before I have to pay late charges. So I said, okay, well, we'll do it around the 1st. And as the week went on, it ran through my mind again, and I said, well, why did they put those 16 days? It'll be late. It has nothing to do with paying it on time on the 1st. And that's what came to my mind. And then Lori brought that out about the 16 days or after the 1st when you pay it, you have what they call, I guess, like a grace period, but that makes you get a penalty for late charges plus you're late in paying your mortgage. I said, so much deception. So much deception.
Yep.
See, Sharif, what they do is they weave the web. It says, oh, what a wicked web you weave when you practice to deceive. They never stop weaving the web. But that's why we have to be educated, have to be informed, we have to read. And so when these things come up, we can see it. It's very clear. It's very clear because we have the truth. And that's what Thor does. It gives you the truth. It gives you the true foundation to build upon. And you'll see it. You won't be in darkness. It'll be right before your eyes. It's a lot of things. When we read, it's right before our eyes. But if we don't know the truth, don't have the foundation, we won't see it.
That's right.
And so
it's just little things that, you know, that evade us when we don't take our time and reread based on what we think we see. And, you know, when I'm reading this article and I say that, you know, Nation Star, these companies are non-bank servicers, and everybody's talking about, well, Nation Star is my servicer. You're like, wow. And I'm just listening. I'm just like, wow, you're not even listening. You know, and when we become attentive, it helps us because, you know, we can't just run fast through life. We have to be very poised, and we have to, you know, sometimes slow down. Sometimes I'm fast, and I'm always getting caught. Slow down. You know, slow down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you something funny. I'll share something with you, Mother. You know, when President Obama came out, yeah, I didn't jump on the bandwagon. Like, oh, he's black, so he's good. You know, I just said, look, I know a lot of people of color that I wouldn't trust, you know, with a fingernail. So, you know, when I listened to him and he talks, I said, dang, why is he always stuttering and he's got this little, and he, you know, and I'm a fast talker. You know, I can think fast. So I really think it's mechanical when you can put your thoughts together with speed like us New Yorkers do. You know, so I'm like, wow, he just talks all slow. Until a wise man told me, he said, that man's very smart. He talks slow. He's very methodical. Like you gotta listen to him sometimes. So as I began to pay more attention to him, I did understand that he's not really talking slow. He's really choosing his words.
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, fast talkers like us, we'll blurt something out. They'll be like, "Oh man, sure, did you say that?" I mean, like, it comes up and comes out. But the wise man was telling me sometimes, Sharif, that's not good. Sometimes you got to slow down, take your time, choose your words wisely. And he's a wise guy that he speaks. You know, he chooses his words and he watches what he says. And that's a good quality, too. So, but still, I'll take my speed because that's just
what
I like.
Take your speed, but you can also watch the words as you're speeding along. That's it.
There you go.
Choose your words. Yeah.
There you go. That's true. So good job, Mother. We thank you. We love you as always. We always love when you're here. I do. And
yes.
Thank you for coming. We'll see you on Monday. I'll call you over the weekend. I promise. I got to talk to you. We got a lot to catch up
on. Okay. All right. See you, Sharif.
All right. Love you, Mother. All right. All right. Let's. I think we got one. 9850813.
Hello.
Hello.
I don't know if I haven't listened to the whole call today, but I wanted to know if you've answered the question already, I'll go back and listen to the show. But my question is, if you have late payments, that is one. How can you correct that on your credit report? That's one question. Another one is if your credit isn't as good as it should be. Another reason is because of the your ratio to income. How would you be able to correct that on your credit report if you can?
You know, if you've been with a creditor for a while, they have something that it's called, and I don't know if I'm naming it properly, but it's close. It's called a complementary adjustment. Okay, and what that is that say you've been over the creditor, you had a couple of lates, and you paid for a while, you can ask them for a complementary adjustment because you know it's hurting your credit score, or you've paid them for a while. And many times they'll do that. They'll take the lates off because, you know, they want you to continue to do business with them, and they feel if, you know, your credit's a little bit better, then you'll get more credit with them. So you can do that if you still have the credit or not. If the account is closed, then it's really probably
right.
Not, and it closed out with lates, it's probably not too much you can do with that until it runs past the statute of limitations of reporting, and then it'll fall off, or you find a way to get it removed. Maybe the company's not in business, and you dispute it, and then it just falls off.
Okay, so there's really nothing you can do about that one.
I just told you what you can do, but
I don't know your
circumstances, so you would have to apply your circumstances to a couple of the answers that I gave you.
Right, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what about the other one?
What was the other one? I'm sorry.
About the ratio to income, ratio for income to debt analysis.
Debt to
how
income?
Could you really correct that?
Well, where are they getting information from? They're getting information from you. Where the credit bureaus are allowed to determine your debt to income is because you're applying for credit, and you're putting down, I have a salary of this, and they're calculating your credit for it and see how much debt you have going out, and they're determining your debt to income. They're not getting it from anywhere else. They get it from you.
Okay.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Okay. All right. Okay.
All right.
One more thing. A lot of different companies, they claim that they can help you with the late payments, like take it off. So they can't do no more than that.
I can't speak for what they can do. I don't know if what they do is legal or illegal. I really don't know what they're doing. They may could. I mean, you know, are you dealing with a credit report that's mostly clean except for some late payments? Is that what you're dealing with?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have any collections and you just have a couple of lates, and those couple of lates
will
put you.
I have some doctor bills.
Okay. Well, why don't you focus on those, getting those collections off of there? Because you got Dr. Ville, they're more than likely with third-party debt collection agencies. You need to go ahead
and
get them off.
Right. And one time they were saying that they didn't affect your credit score. They were saying that.
Huh?
At one time they were saying that the hospital bills doesn't affect your credit score.
Is this the company that said can take off your late payments?
I've read it numerous
times. I'm going to go ahead on record and guess and say, yeah, that was them. Oh, yeah. Sound like one of them bootleg companies. Oh, no, the collections don't bother you. You need to have us get the late payments off. Wow. Yeah. You know, I would say that, you know, Thor offers a couple of webinars on cleaning up your credit. It's available on the website. You can go to it, and that'll give you step-by-step on how you can clean up a lot of those things in the process of which you need to do it, and I would definitely say save your money, get you some webinars, and, you know, and do it yourself. And you can go to thorministry.homestead.com, and that's the website.
Okay. Okay.
All righty.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate your question. Thank you.
All right.
Let's go to 415-8776.
Yeah, hi, Brother Sharif. This is Adam from CSA.
How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Doing good.
So we're actively incorporating all of the Fair Debt Collection into the audits now, and we're finding that everyone that's coming after our clients in foreclosure is a debt collector. My question is that I've got some defunct banks in Puerto Rico, specifically Eurobank and RG Premier, and they were put into receivership with the FDIC, and then they were sold off in a bidding war to Scotiabank and Oriental Bank and Trust. So I am treating both of those companies as debt collectors, even though the FDIC says in its rules that they have the right to transfer those debts to those organizations. We're still treating them as debt collectors. So what I'm wondering is
let me just add to what you said. I mean, debt collectors go to the FDIC, debt buyers, to buy debt. I mean, you can go there and you've got $100,000. You can buy $1 million in debt from the FDIC. So, yeah, they can sell debt. Like I tell you, debt collector can call you. They can try to collect the debt. They can assign a debt, transfer a debt. They can put their butt print on it if they want to. They can do anything they want, okay? And if you pay them, you're allowed to do so. It's your decision. So the FDIC is right. You know, we can transfer those debt. Yeah, you can do what you want to do. But, you know, you sell it for pennies on a dollar. We all know that. You know, you can go to the FDIC website right now, and if you got enough money and pool your money together with 10 other debt buyers, like Mr. Petila down in Florida, that's what he does. He goes to the FDIC, like, I got $500,000. Can I get me $5 million in debt? And they'll sell it to you. I think the minimum is like, you know, you have to buy $5 million worth. I don't know. I don't know that for sure, but it is a minimum, so it's not for little guys. But at any rate, yeah, they're debt collectors, so go ahead.
Right. So the thing we've been having a problem with is actually finding the trusts that these loans were securitized in by the defunct banks. So one of the tactics we're using is to subpoena the FDIC and the debt collector who bought the debt to find out where the records are to actually who is the actual owner or the lender in this situation. And I was just wondering if you had any other ideas on what we might be able to do to find out that information.
Yeah, I'm going to give you my honest opinion. What I think you might do is not do what you just said you were going to do. Okay? Because, again, some people like it rough. I mean, subpoena the FDIC and the debt collector to see where they bought the debt. Well, some of that information is proprietary. They don't have to, you know, that's like me going to Kentucky and say, hey, give me a book and let me see how much you pay for that chicken and those fries, and let me see how much you're charging me, and I want to know what ingredients is put in and how you do business. No, you don't have a right to do that. If the piece of chicken that you sold me was bad, then I'm going to ask you about that piece of chicken, but you don't have a right to question the other chicken that I have in the restaurant. You asking the FDIC is just combative. What you told me was enough, and I told you they're debt collectors. That's it. I mean, I don't know. I've never subpoenaed anybody but a debt collector certain records because I know they don't have any. So for you to get the governing body out there and talking about you want to subpoena them as a homeowner, who is going to be able to do all of that? Who's going to, and in what setting are you going to do that? And how long are you willing to fight a subpoena, and how savvy are you within the law to be able to not get that subpoena quashed? And I don't know about that. No, I do know about it. I'm telling you right now, that's not going to be successful for you.
Yeah, the
subpoenas are
actually being issued by a law firm. It's not a homeowner. So the actual law firm in Puerto Rico is actually doing the subpoena to the FDIC. So, and they're at the Supreme Court level right now with a case with 157 plaintiffs. And they're winning cases. But in certain cases where these banks have gone under and the information seems to have disappeared, we've been unable to find, you know, where they securitized the actual loans that they gave these both individuals and businesses.
Yeah. But Adam, you know, I can respect the fact that, you know, securitization is your placing. So, you know, it's interesting. And when I did it, you know, it was a nice little, you know, it was a nice duck shoot. It was good hunting. You know, it's mystery in there. It was good bounty hunting. You know, trying to find where the rabbit trail goes. You know, and I had a lot of fun and made a good bit of money doing it. And was good at doing it. That's just what you're going to try to find as the end result is where it lies. I really don't care about that because I'll get to that point far before you find out if you find out that it's been securitized just by looking at the transactional documents. And what you're saying is too much. Yeah, man, they may be at the Supreme Court level and they may be doing some things. But you got to understand they're probably in some sort of class action capacity or, you know, asset capacity where the attorneys are getting their $500, $600 an hour plus costs and all of that, and that's their playpen, though. That's not for an average homeowner. And even if they have an attorney, who wants to be caught up in that nonsense? Anyway, that benefits the attorney, no different than class actions. You know, they benefit the attorneys, you know. So, if I have a company that is out of business, and I'm the only survivor and competent fact witness to that transaction, who wins? Who facts win? Okay? You see a lot of movies out there, mob movies, right? And they kill Guido. And Guido's in the hotel room, and he's sitting up there drinking and maybe sniffing some cocaine, maybe doing drugs, and his little rented honey go in the bathroom, and the mob comes in to shoot him, and she sees him, and she runs, and they're looking for the only witness, right? Okay? Well, Guido's dead. That should be end of it. No, you got a witness. You got a witness to the shooting. There's only one witness left in many of these transactions, and that's the homeowner. Okay, so who's going to contradict what you say? In order for them, many times, some of the documents are self-authenticating. In order for them to prove anything about that transaction, they have to be able to bring in that dead person. Well, if Guido's dead, who are they going to bring in? So the ride up to see who's securitizing and who this and the Supreme Court and the FDIC, I don't see what's that for you to defend your house. No offense. I mean, at the end of the rabbit trail, even if you find that the remick was underneath some a statue in Africa, how is that going to pay you? What's the compensation? You win the hunt. What else? The consumer protection law is going to give you the options. Look, if I go and I look somewhere and I find that remick underneath a rock in Africa, you're going to pay me a lot of money. Now, that's an interesting treasure hunt. Do you understand? That's worth a subpoena, because at the end of that hunt, I'm going to ask you for my bag of money. But if it's not going to result in that, I just don't see. That's my opinion, but, to each his own. But
and the second part is, how does that apply, how does this all apply to commercial loans that are corporate loans?
It doesn't. Your FDCPA is only for natural persons, so it doesn't apply to corporation loans, corporate loans. Really,
okay.
Tiller and a lot of the Tiller and all those don't apply to corporate loans. Now, you can still challenge who owns it because they securitize and slice and dice and sold and transfer corporate loans. I mean, but you can't use the FDCPA in that capacity.
In that capacity, okay.
Right.
All right, that's all I have.
All right, buddy. Appreciate it, Adam. Thank you.
Yeah, we
all right. Sorry, I cut you off. Oh, I thought you were done. You got 1 minute left if you want to call in and continue the show. We're not going to go too much longer, maybe 15, 20 minutes, 657-383-0332. If you're in the chat, you probably want to call in. Keep the conversation coming, or going, rather. And appreciate everyone's questions. I think I got to everyone. I'm sure I did. Yes, I did. So I am going to turn it back over to the Lionesses of Gore. And I think I interrupted Layla in her dissertation. So I'm going to let her finish and then close out. When you get back, I'm going to go back on here and eat off this hyena right quick. And when you're done, I'll be back.
Thank you, Brother Sharif. And actually, when you came in, you were at a perfect segue because we were talking about the debt collectors. 15 U.S.C. 1692 A6, debt collector. And he defined in a really wonderful synopsis what the debt collector was. He talked about the servicer and how these servicers are selling servicing rights. And you can't be a servicer, a debt collector, and they can't buy servicing rights. I mean, that is synonymous with a debt collector. Let's put it that way. So when you hear these buzzwords, they are very, very important. A debt collector, servicer, they're not the same as a creditor or mortgagee. A consumer is a person, right? We just read what that was. Okay, any person that is a natural person. We just heard Adam call in, and he was asking about a commercial transaction. It's only for a natural person. It's not for an entity or a corporation. So these are designed for us to be able to be protected by these corporations, these entities, these big conglomerates that are shaking and baking behind the scenes, doing these credit default swaps behind the scenes, buying, millions of dollars worth of debt for pennies on the dollar. You got that $100,000 home. They may have bought your home for alleged loan for $3,000 to $5,000. I mean, that's huge. Look at the profit margin they make. And then if you decide that you're going to go into a modification and you're doing business with a debt collector, then you empower them like they are the bank. And Brother Sharif just read that article, or several articles, that talked about how Aqua and NationStar, the big thugs in the industry right now, how they've risen to prominence in a non-bank, as non-bank servicers. And they feel like they are, according to the article, that they're saying that they're holding, that they're providing and have better servicing records than the bank. So they're comparing themselves to the bank. So when we talk about, we're going to get to the point where we're talking about when we had a caller call in, and thank you for calling in when you were talking about, the mini Miranda that you hear when you call to make your mortgage payment. Who are you making your mortgage payment to? We just heard in the article that they're a debt collector. They're a non-bank servicer. All right? And so when we talk about at the beginning of this broadcast that we have to define and learn, and that's what we're going through, the definitions of who we are and who we are in relation to the transactions that we initiate in commerce, it's really important to understand that, and that's why we're taking the time. And you hear Brother Sharif; he talks fast, right? You gotta keep up with him. I'm speaking a little bit slower. You know, I'm from New York, and I remember my first job that I had here. I had my manager come to me because my background is banking, formerly banking, and I was dealing with customers in a telecapacity. And she came and tapped me on the shoulder and said, you know what, you're doing a great job, but you're talking too fast. You know, so I have had to learn methodically to slow down my speech. And so from a training perspective, I've learned to slow down my speech so people can get it. All right? And I'm purposefully talking at this rate. While I'm still learning a lot of things myself, guys, but I'm purposefully talking at this rate so that we're hearing that people are not getting it, okay? So please pay attention and please take really good notes and please just dig into this and read it like you would your holy book.
I got some breaking news. Let me give you all some breaking news. Thor Radio Network has some breaking news. AT&T. Please stand by for your regularly scheduled broadcast. AT&T Mobility has recently confirmed that it has suffered a data breach. The personal information, social security numbers, and call records of an undisclosed number of AT&T Mobility customers were stolen. The breach was alleged to have occurred earlier this year, April 9th through the 21st. The criminals appear to have been interested in information they can use to unlock phones they had already stolen. Since Social Security numbers were also involved, users are strongly encouraged to take steps to protect their identity. Now, I think that was NSA got that information. Well, they probably already had it. But, you know, for somebody why would you need Social Security numbers to get an unlock code? Like, they already break phones or what do you call jailbreak phones. So sounds like a bunch of nonsense. But again, there you go. Social Security numbers and call records. Get you a pay-as-you-go phone. You know, reduce your use of the Social Security number. I'm just telling you. And some people call it the mark of the beast. Now, you can see why they probably name it as such, because it can absolutely destroy ruin your life. I had a friend that, you know, his brother used his driver's license, name, and knew his Social Security number, and he was driving around one day and realized he had a warrant for a traffic ticket that was in another state. He never did. Well, all of a sudden, I'm sorry, I got to take you in, man. There's a warrant there. You had no way to verify that, you know, and you can give anybody's information to anybody, all right? So, you know, these things happen all the time. So, you know, use of these numbers, you know, a lot of times, I'm just telling you, can have you suffer a lot of consequences. That's why you should take these debt collectors. Not only ask them, okay, you know, people get concerned about what the debt. You know, my thing would be like, it's like, how did you get that information? Where did you get it from? That's my first thing. Where did you get it from? How did you get my name? Where did you get it from? I'm going to find out how you got it, and you better pray you got it legally. You better pray you got it legally. Because if you have my personal information and you're not supposed to have it, then the consumer protection laws is your least of your worries. You know, so we have to be concerned, you know, when this information is in the hands of
of companies that just throw it around like baseball cards. I mean, they really do. Are we going to sit it over here, we'll flip it over here, we'll flip it over? You see how many eyes and are touching and seeing and your proprietary information, your most confidential information, and nobody protects you. Okay? Nobody protects you.
You know, Sharif, so, on that whole thing, a real interesting deal that that everyone can research this weekend just for, you know, grins and giggles, you know, research the private prisons, the labor forces that are being utilized by the private prisons, and you will be shocked and amazed as to what these guys are doing. I mean, these people that are calling you at, you know, maybe from, I don't know, you know, Amazon or whoever or whatever, but you're giving your information to, they're sitting in a private prison. They are working like a call center. And you know, Brother Sharif is exactly right. You don't know who, what, why, where, any of that noise, man.
You know, a lot of these Internal Revenue Service, a lot of IRS schemes,
yeah,
derived from jail. People in
That's
jail
right.
were doing these tax returns and sending them to their people on the outside. And they were doing them for people that were in jail. They were doing them for people that were outside of jail. And when you talk about the private prison system, that's one of the other things you can talk about. I have seen a news report show on how the private prisons are taking over. There was a family that had a farm, and they raised fish, I believe. And the prison, you know, they featured two prisons. One of the prisons built Harley Davidson inside the prison. They built a factory inside the prison where they were building Harley Davidson. Well, you know, they built license plates too. And then this other one, they had a fish manufacturing factory, and they grew they did the fish. Okay, they grew fish, trout, and all that. And the prices were cheap. Because the prisoners were doing it, and they paid the prisoners 50 cents, okay? And the farmers were like, we can't compete with the jails. We can't compete with the jails. They're running us out of business. The jails, the prices are too low because they're not paying us. We have to pay people, you know, minimum wage here. So we can't keep up. And this is the kind of systemic stuff where you see, you know, big money pockets are just, they're doing it now. Part of that article I didn't read to you was Experian. You know, they took a lot of their businesses to India and created one of the biggest consumer credit reporting agencies in India. And none of y'all can say that you called any one of your service providers out there and didn't get a call that was sent over to India. Okay, and you had, you know, some foreigners answering the phone. Meanwhile, they're talking about the economy here sucks. I really think they're trying to collapse this country. And when you look at Equifax, TransUnion, Experian, some of these power companies, just do a little bit of research and start to realize that we're more than 50% owned by foreigners. Everything.
That's right.
Including the highways.
Right, exactly.
We're not even ours. Do you understand?
Right.
People always talk about China. You know, China owns everything. They do. I mean, we own nothing anymore. They sell everything from fingernails to trees to land to power cords to water, you know, to everything else in this country. They sell every bit of it, including you. Okay, I'll give you an indication. You a slave, too. Okay, I just see how the Attorney General, I was just looking into some of the consumer protection laws, and you have to file a complaint with the FTC, and the FTC is able to go sue based on your complaint and get money instead of you, and you're the victim of the consumer crime. It's just crazy. Well, they're doing it every day. The attorney generals are suing because they're committing certain atrocities upon you, and you don't get any of that money. Okay, I'm reading an article right now from the Consumer Protection Bureau, Consumer Financial Protection.
Yes.
Yeah, before you read that article, within the prison industrial complex, I mean, it's growing across the country. A lot of the companies have been doing business overseas, but they're looking back at coming, bringing, they're not worrying about hiring out overseas anymore because they can go into the prison system, and they're building these industrial complexes all around the country. So when you do the research, you find, I think Georgia right now is the largest state of the imprisoned inmates that are producing a lot of the things that they're producing. They're producing handbags, a brand name label handbags in prisons, and selling them. You know, they're still keeping the profit margin, but hiring these people at, like you say, the 50 cents. I think in one prison they're paying $1 an hour to some of these prisoners, and they're just so happy to do it because they're learning a craft inside the prison. So, you know, we have to be careful about what we do and how we do it. And when we hear these atrocities and these breaches, having those monitors on your credit and having, you know, they have identity theft monitoring or driver's licenses as well, you can find that so that nobody can encroach that because they have companies that will go back and restore that your information back to the way it was prior to the breach. But if you don't have that in place and you have a breach, they're not going to be able to restore that for you, and you might end up suffering with yourself behind in the cage. Back to you, Brother Sharif.
Yeah, I was just going to mention right quick, and then we'll tie it all up and see if Rudy has anything to say. The Consumer Finance Protection Bureau had to GE Capital for this credit card add-on practices and discriminatory debt relief promotions. And they hit them for $225 million. And then they hit them for some fees, I think, down here. You know, they must refund $56 million. And 638,000 consumers. So if you have GE Capital, all your credit cards, Bank of America, all of them have these little fraudulent fees, and they're always doing something wrong. And they understand they can go for years and they have 5 million customers, and they can charge you all $1 a month more, and you don't know it, and you won't find a dollar. That's $5 million a month. Okay, that's a lot of money for 2 or 3 years. And then they'll pay back a percentage in fines, and it's profitable to commit fraud against you. Get a load of that. And you don't know that you can take them into the consumer protection laws because that is a violation of 15 U.S.C. 1692, them collecting a fee or debt. It's not contracted, but nobody's telling you that.
Uh-oh.
Somebody's making a lot of noise in the background, a lot of shuffling. So, you know, nobody's going to tell you that, you know, you can now, those people that just got a refund, and somebody got noise. Who's that? I'm going to mute all of y'all. You can now go and use that ruling with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, I mean, with the consumer protection laws, and sue them. All right, sue them. So these are opportunities that you have. Hopefully you take advantage of them, you'll use them, and you'll benefit from them and stop allowing everyone else to benefit from them. So it's 2:15. I think we can go ahead and transition out of here. It's Friday. And we hope everyone enjoyed the show. Free Your Mind Friday. I'm going to let the crew open them back up, let them give their closing remarks. We'll see you on Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And be waiting for your email to see who's going to be hosting, who will be on the show, if anyone but us. So, Layla, Lori, and Rudy, you want to have closing remarks?
I'd like to say that the basic information that was covered today was really, really fantastic. It was the basic definition of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, and that creates the foundation of your knowledge to move forward. Everybody, please download that, read that, color it up, mark it up, and get a good understanding, because once you have that basic knowledge, you can certainly go forward. Happy day and good weekend.
I'd like to say thank you to everybody for coming to get your education on, coming to get your power on. I dig it. To the lady who was calling earlier and was logged in on the chat deal, it was saying, you know, the judges aren't looking at it, they're not validating XYZ and XYZ. I would say for you, I don't know if you're in federal or you are in state court, but I would tell you to go and look up, if you're in federal, look in your FRE, your Federal Rules of Evidence. Look through 801 through 807. That's hearsay. Start there and open your mind. I would say to the lady who called earlier and was talking about her medical stuff on her credit report, I tell her to go and look at 1681BG, section of your medical information. And finally, to wrap up, I love strategic minds, and I love the old ancient and Asian, you know, warriors like Sun Tzu. I love his art of war. I love it. So if I can just share with everyone, because it really does apply to the FCCPA and the simplicity of it, successful strategies flow like water. They are shaped by the circumstances of the conflict. When water flows, it avoids the high ground and it seeks the low ground. Successful strategies, likewise, avoid difficult methods and find easy ones. Just as the flow of water is shaped by the contour of the land, the flow of victory is shaped by the actions of the opponent. In other words, Adam, don't get lost in the weeds trying to find the rabbit. You're making it about something that it doesn't need to be about. Simplify. Just make it simple. That's how you are able to perfect your arrow. And you shape your victory upon the opponent's distractions and all of their shell game. Just the simplest arrow will shoot them straight in the head. Everybody have a great weekend. Study, study, study.
All right.
Greetings, family. It's been a wonderful, wonderful time spent together this day. And I pray that you walk away with empowered with the knowledge that was imparted to you today, as well as empowered to take action in your cause. I just want to reiterate, you know, because we talked about fear, and I know that once you leave this call, you'll be on a little high, and then you'll think, oh, I don't know if I can do this. You know, fear is an instrument of manipulation, and that's all of the powers that be are throwing all kinds of things at you through the television, through the radio, you know, the people that you're around. You know, you're getting bombarded from every front. Maybe it's time for you to pull the plug and just go into yourself and put yourself behind the wall. I shared just this last week that I used the FDCPA, I used my state laws, and I analyzed my situation. I found 29 violations with one, and I found 26 violations with the other, with the state law. That means moolah, 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 ching, 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 ching. So, we're going to move forward to make sure that I build a case that I can prepare myself and position myself to win. And that's what this is about. Lastly, I'd like to share something with you guys, and this is something that I think will help you. It's called the Optimist Creed, and this is a promise that you make to yourself. This is a promise I make to myself. I promise to be so strong that nothing can disturb my peace of mind, to talk health, happiness, and prosperity to every person I meet, to make all my friends feel there is something good in them, to look at the sunny side of everything and make my optimism come true, to think only of the best, to work only for the best, and to expect only the best. To be just as enthusiastic about the success of others as I am about my own. To forget the mistakes of the past and press on to the greater achievements of the future. To wear a cheerful countenance at all times and give every living creature I meet a smile. To give so much time to the improvement of myself that I have no time to criticize others. to be too large for worry, too noble for anger, too strong for fear, and too happy to permit the presence of trouble. Love you all. Peace and blessings, and we'll talk to you next time.
Peace, peace. I'm your host and founder, Brother Cerebral, and I thank you all for joining Thor Radio Network today. Hopefully you have enlightened yourself with the information we've provided, our experiences, our opinions, our knowledge, our research. Hopefully it benefits you and your family in some consumer-related way. Education overcomes fear. If you have fears, because you don't know what you need to know. Educate yourself. Study. And be sincere about your studies. Have on your end table your Bible that guides your life, and your commercial Bible that guides your conduct and behavior as a consumer. Appreciate you being here. We'll see you on Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Peace.
Is another DJ's Hell and Funk exclusive dance mix. DJ's Hell and Funk.
Dig, dig, dig this.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Here we go again. How low can you go?
How y'all feel? I feel out there.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh, yeah. Okay, it's time to keep it in the house.
Pop, 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 pop